This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. It's raining out. It's supposed to be raining off and on all day today. Thunder showers because of the heat in the summer. New Orleans heat. But nothing's sinking. Hopefully. Here in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki with you on the Big Show this morning. Lots to get to again today, and of course, the home run derby last night, the Major League Baseball All-Star game tonight, and then the sports world goes dark, save for the ESPYs. I love the ESPYs coming up on Wednesday night. And then the Blue Bombers, of course, host the Argos Thursday night at Investors Group Field. We'll talk about that. We'll hear from some of the Bombers, head coach O'Shea, Matt Nichols, front and center yesterday at practice. Injury update as well. McGregor-Mayweather press conference today. Mr. Paul Edmonds is going to join us, Mr. Milt Stegall, Mr. Jason Cole, and of course an hour of your phone calls. The Jets signed a forward again. Had to take a pay cut. We'll get into that. But gentlemen, how are we today?
Not too bad. Fantastic day yesterday. Fellas had a lot of fun, intense game in soccer, and then went for a real nice bike ride with the boys. So it was a nice night, man.
Cute.
And it was real cool sitting there watching the home run derby with him. Gosh. That was a lot of fun. And he was just like, he couldn't wrap his mind around at 9 years old, like how different it was from a game and just exactly what was going on with all the dingers. It was pretty cool.
I don't know if I've ever been as excited to watch an exhibition kind of event like that before.
I agree with you.
Yeah. And it was, I mean, Judge was obviously the main dish, but some of the other things that went on there was just... What an absurd night. And, you know, with the new announcing crew, with Chris Berman gone, like, I don't know if it felt cheesy at some points with how excited they were getting, or if it was actual, like, jaw-dropping, I can't believe this is actually happening every time somebody swings the bat.
Well, there were, like, and specifically to me, guys, the Sanchez-Stanton first-round matchup, it was ridiculous. The number in a row that Gary Sanchez did there when he was just flying. And as far as the calling goes compared to the Berman thing, it was night and day superior. Chris Berman had a heck of a run and was a lot of fun. But just the monotony of the back call and the lack of conversation during it, I thought that was superior how they delivered it this year.
It was interesting because it's designed as a gimmick and for fans. And usually these things don't always deliver to what they could be. I thought last night it did. I thought last night, you know, even the Gary Sanchez, who was vilified for even being there, being that, you know, he doesn't have 20 home runs and there's several other guys who have 20 plus, and he comes in and beats the defending champ. There was that drama. There was Judge facing Justin Bour, and of course Bour setting the tone early.
Yeah.
I was driving home last night. Congratulations, Kim Matthew won our TSN 1290 tailgate party last night. I'll get into that later in the show. But we were over there, and I was driving home last night when Bour was hitting these, and I'm like, oh man, Judge is going to have a
down,
hard time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So just as I was pulling out, I heard what Bour had, and then my whole drive home, Judge was up, and how he just, the first three were bombs. Gone. Then he sort of wiped his brow, and it delivered. Like, it's one of those things that will always have its detractors because it's a gimmick for fans and the players, but it actually delivered, and that rarely happens to me when these things happen in sports.
I was thinking when I was watching this, too, and it was neat early on there when Judge was a part of that crew and the chatter and back and forth. How fortunate are the New York Yankees to go from Derek Jeter to Aaron Judge? Like, as far as being the face, and hey, it's his rookie year, but if he's not the face of the franchise, please tell me differently. But you go from such a likable man and a just all around the level of role model and sort of the way he presented himself. Like, do you guys get the same sort of feel in the way the presentation of the man from Jeter to Judge? Because I do when I watch it. I just think, how fortunate are they as a franchise to have the torch being passed like that? You just don't get that.
Well, and there's several guys. You've mentioned it throughout this baseball season. The Yankees we don't talk about enough, and I know anti-Yankee fans will disagree with that, but the way they've turned this around, and they're 3 years away from when they were like, what are they going to do with A-Rod? Yeah. What are they going to do with these salaries? Can they get rid of? What an ugly scenario that was with A-Rod. Like, it literally was. There were times where I talked to a reporter from New York who said in the offseason of A-Rod's last year, they're talking about playing him in the outfield, hoping his hip gives out on him instead of DHing him so that he'll have to go away. Like, that's how bad that relationship went. But just the turnaround of the Gary Sanchez, the Aaron Judge, who's the first baseman, the Greg Bird, who's supposed to be the next guy. I don't think it's Judge's team yet, but he's definitely front and center the face of it. Like, yeah, I mean team like the guy in the locker room, and he's a rookie. But he's definitely
he's the face of his team.
Yeah, you know, the second you said, do you feel fortunate for the Yankees, my initial thought was, screw you. Screw you guys. Do you feel fortunate for the Canadian that they found another goalie finally? Like, I don't have any warm and fuzzy feelings. But I like for a team like the Yankees who are, you know, one of those spectrum teams, right? Either beloved or universally loathed. Aaron Judge is not on that spectrum. Like, I haven't met anybody that doesn't like the guy.
Big smile, the great, fantastic personality.
Seems like a genuine dude.
Speaks so well, yeah.
Like, just everything about him, and then it's kind of like, you guys probably don't play as many video games as I do, or did, and like people kind of in and around my age, but he looks like when you play MLB The Show or MLB 2K, and you create your own character, and you just kind of max out all the stats, and you put, like, oh, I'll put a guy 6'8", 270. Like, that'll never happen in real. Like, he is, like, the maxed out, create your own character in a video game. But he's, like, he's real life. And it's, like, you kind of always expect when a rookie comes out hot that, yeah, there'll be a bit of a tail off at some point. I don't know.
So effortless. Like, yesterday, just watching, almost like the Ernie Els of the... of the home run swing, huh?
Well, is there a more boss move than your first two home runs in the Derby? Dead center, opposite field, second deck. Yeah. It should have just ended right there. I don't know if he's going to slow down. Maybe the average creeps back down a little bit when pitchers kind of figure out some of his weak spots. But with how short Yankee Stadium is, and just like without him even trying, he's getting way out of the bleachers.
Last night, like the semis, he had about 2 minutes left, and the final, I think in both cases, he had about 2 minutes left when he wrapped it up.
He hit 47 home runs in the Derby that totaled 3.9 miles traveled combined. His longest drive of the night went 513 feet, and he topped 500 feet four times.
And when he was asked to, I don't know if you guys saw the presser, when he was asked about the long dinger that hit over 500 feet, he just kind of shook his head and smiled. Like, what could he say about it?
Well, even that one he hit at Yankee Stadium in BP that was
496 or whatever?
Yeah, and it wrecked something that was on the concourse, like a donut stand or something.
He hit the roof. They didn't even count the roof one.
That's right.
That might have been 650. Like, who knows this guy?
So, and how it played out, too, is interesting as well. And I mentioned that Stanton, the defending champion, got upset in the first round. My boy, my dark horse, Charlie Blackman, didn't get out of the first round. But it came down to Judge and Miguel Sano of the Minnesota Twins. And Judge beats him 11-10 to take this year's title. But the way it played out, because to me, I've always liked the home run derby for the first 5 minutes. And then when it gets to the second round, it's like, okay, this is dragging on. And
I didn't
feel that way last night
to me.
And I thought that it was like there was intrigue in each of it.
And you know what I think played a big role in that, JT, was the back. Not hearing that for 2 hours is really nice. You know, as much as I love Berman.
I had it on the radio, so I don't, I don't know what.
But the broadcast of it was absolutely lights out superior compared to years past.
There was a little bit too much kind of cheerleading for me, where any home run was a celebration of the game. Like, there was a little bit too much of that for me, but it was fun. Like, it was a fun kind of broad. Like, I'm not gonna harp on them too much for going crazy after each dinger, but I enjoyed it. Like, it was a surprisingly entertaining 2 hours. Like, usually for the Derby, you watch kind of the main guys, and then you turn off
Come
and you tune in for the final. Watch the whole thing straight through.
more fun than previous years?
Night and day.
I don't even think
it
was
close. Not even comparable. Yeah.
It's like, it was like a different event. Mm-hmm. It was like they added something new to All-Star, the All-Star festivities that hadn't been done before.
Well, and it was funny because this is the big show, by the way, TSN 1290, and it was funny leading into this on Media Day prior to it. Juan Carlos Stanton, the defending champ and, of course, the star of the Miami Marlins, said, I hope he's getting asked as many questions, Aaron Judge, that is, that I about me, that I am about him. And there is a, and I first thought, I go, you know, I wonder if there's too much hype in, amongst the players around this guy. But then you see some of the comments that came out last night that, like Sano said, that guy Aaron Judge, he doesn't get tired. The quote from Charlie Blackman is great. I'd never seen him in person. He's really impressive. The first time I saw him, he was in a crowd. I was wondering what he was standing on. He's a monster. Like in the baseball community, and we've talked about his size since he was in the majors this year, but more focusing on what he's doing as a baseball player. But you don't see guys this big, that agile. Like it's just a, it's, I don't want to say freak of nature.
Well yeah,
but
you should.
He is a freak of nature.
Yeah, absolutely.
With what he can do on the baseball field at that size and that mm-hmm. speed.
Sort of almost redefining things, right? Like, and hey, Stanton's right there. Like Stanton's 6'6 and 250. And you got Judge at 6'8 or whatever he is at 280. Like these are some, it's just, it's absolutely remarkable. There's no, and when you can tune all of that in, to have the pendulum that's going on here for smacking out the home runs and just the level of consistency in that swing, it's a thing of absolute beauty. It was too bad Stanton, I guess, the night before playing across country and then the flight, they were saying yesterday, his flight got home super late, like in the morning hours, right? And then just tired, because you saw him physically get tired in that first round there. So it's just too bad that some of that didn't live up to the hype, but it was all fantastic.
Well, and that's what I was sort of referencing yesterday as well. Like, having watched some of this and watched them at different levels live, this is a tiring event. Like, it's hard to hit that many home runs in BP.
Just swing the bat that many. Yeah. Like, Sanchez in the second round was gassed. Like, a bunch of those guys were just way too gassed. And then even Sano in the final. Like,
yeah. And guy Judge that's said like, he was tired, but yeah. He did not look tired.
Yeah,
Sano
was like, what, 250 himself? Like 6'3", 250, and he was hitting pop-ups to kind of mid-center and mid-left field. So it's, yeah, that's just the only kind of worry you have with rookies and with guys in the Derby.
The Derby hangover.
Right? But, yeah. I mean, Aaron Judge looked like he could have went all night.
Yeah.
So if I'm a Yankees fan, I don't even know if I worry too much
worried.
About it. Like,
yeah.
He's kind of like Yarmy Yager. Like, he probably did BP after the Derby for a couple of hours, too.
In a weighted vest, yeah.
Tannenbaum.
Weighted wrist cuffs.
Yeah, a
or
couple
something.
Donuts on the bat. Yeah, whatever.
So the American League or the American League and National League will face off tonight in the All-Star Classic. We'll have it for you live at 6 o'clock right here on TSN 1290. Your starters are Chris Sale, the Boston Red Sox, and of course Matt Scherzer from the Washington Nationals. What do you expect from the All-Star game tonight? You're going to watch? You like this? I was mentioning yesterday, we'll get into, I'm not a fan of All-Star games, but if there is one that I don't mind, it's the Major League Baseball one.
Yeah, I'll kind of, you know, watch the early parts for sure. I love the introductions and stuff, some of my favorite parts, and we'll watch it for sure. Like, certainly the beginning of it and then the tail end of it, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same. I mean, there's nothing on, so I might catch more of it than I normally would, but it's just kind of a, for me, the All-Star game is kind of a background thing. Like, it's on. If I'm not busy, I'll watch it. But I'm not gonna set aside what is likely 4 hours out of my night to try and squeeze it in.
And is it still the home field advantage on the line?
Sure is.
In this?
Yeah.
Do you guys like that?
I would,
because it came to the forefront last year.
Every
with
year
the
it
Chicago
seems to.
Cubs winning 100 games, and it, you know, basically they had to start on the road because of the All-Star game. Had to start in Cleveland.
Yeah, I don't like it, I suppose. I can understand the thought behind trying to put some importance on it. But, you know, you look at, I can't remember who the pitcher was a couple years ago, went in and was just throwing heaters down the middle of the plate.
Wainwright for Jeter.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and then there was another, was it Jeter early on there? And each year it seems like there's sort of that debate and moral sort of debate almost for pitchers to go out there and just kind of have fun in what they're doing out there, or you're going to play the win the game. So I understand why they're trying to put emphasis and importance on it, but I don't know. Like, it does bother me for sure, but I understand why they're trying to do it originally, you know? Yeah.
I like it. I love the fact that something's on the line, mm-hmm. but yeah. when it rolls around to the World Series, I don't like the fact that a team that's earned home field doesn't get mm-hmm. it.
I think it is a crock of number two that they do this. Like it almost cost the Cubs a World
yeah.
Series.
Yeah.
Like realistically, like that's what happened for the fact that they were by far the best team in the majors during the regular season, and there is borderline no reward to it. It's ridiculous. You can't try and fake enthusiasm and competitiveness. Like, it's either there or it's not. So, I mean, hey, if you want to try and put something on the line, make it a $250,000 prize for charity. And if you want these guys to go out there and compete, and if they want to dog it for charity, then that's on them. But to do it, to make something as crucial as, you know, the finals and home field advantage for that, I think is just ridiculous.
Nobody from the Oakland A's is going to be trying to win home field advantage for the American yeah. League, in my mind. We'll take a break and talk Brandon Tanev next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to support the fifth and final HSC Foundation Celebrity Human Race. It's your chance to race around Winnipeg, competing in challenges and puzzles with your team celebrity September 22nd and 23rd. The money raised allows the HSC Foundation to improve care for Manitoba families with research initiatives, cutting-edge medical equipment, state-of-the-art facilities. To learn more or to register, simply visit tsn1290.ca. This is The Big Show. I'm TSN 1290, Jim, Troy, and Brandon. And last night, the news came out, gentlemen, the Jets have re-signed forward Brandon Tanev on a one-year, one-way contract with an average annual value of $700,000. Tanev played in 51 games for the Jets last season, had 4 points, 2 goals, 2 assists, 26 penalty minutes. Also played 23 games for the Manitoba Moose last year, had 9 points, 2 goals, 7 helpers, and 13 penalty minutes. Undrafted, 25-year-old. After 4 years of Providence College, he's 25 now. $700,000 for 1 year one way is a $135,000 plus haircut for Brandon Tanev.
And you know, a good depth guy here for the Jets. It's still a mystery to some degree to me why. And you're talking about a 54 game sample at this point in time. To like, the lack of production is remarkable. And you wonder, though, if he gets a chance on the fourth line with the Jets, if that fourth line improves, for instance, and Chris Thorburn isn't out there, and there's a couple other guys. You watch him skate, watch him play, and it doesn't make sense to me to some degree that he's not more productive offensively. So you just kind of wonder if that part of his game is able to come around at all. It is a lot of fun watching him out there and just busting his ass like nobody's business. And that you got to respect from him. A fantastic skater and such. But boy, it sure be nice to see him take a little bit of a step and become more productive offensively.
Yeah, I mean, even then, 4 points as a 25-year-old, like you need a lot more than that. And there's tons of guys that can skate, tons of guys that can move and hit and are aggressive, but hockey sense is a pretty big part of the game, and if you don't have it, you don't have it, right? So, I mean, you could have a lot of the physical traits, and for Tanev, it's mostly just the speed factor. But you know, you saw him out there during some of his games, and he's fast and everything. But it's not like he is melt your face off fast. You know what I mean? Like he's a fast guy, but it's nothing too overwhelming. And I think it's he's just one of those guys that, you know, the classic 23, 24-year-old college kid who had a great last year in college, was able to make some solid dough off of it. But when it comes to the NHL level, those guys just have a bit of trouble making an impact. So I expect him. I don't really expect him to play many games with the Jets this year, to be honest, unless there is some kind of a crazy rash of injuries. There's a lot of names up above him on the depth chart, and I just don't think he provides enough at the big league level to make an impact. But that's not to say that he can't give the organization a boost, because He'll probably be the Manitoba Moose's top penalty killer this year, and wouldn't be surprised at all to see him chip in a bit of offense down in the A.
Yep.
Yeah, I think he's a depth guy. I don't mind the signing at all, especially at that term. There's a lot of people that tweeted me last night when I said he'll probably be waived and then be a top forward with the Moose. I got grief for that. I don't think he's going to be a top line guy, but I think he last year he played three different lines, was utility, was top PK, energy guy, played mostly with J.C. LaPonne and Patrice Cormier, the captain. I just see him as that. He's a depth forward who took a pay cut to get a one-way, and if he's waived, he's waived, and they don't have to pay the salary, and if he goes down, he's just a depth forward that adds some probably 25-year-old veteranness to, if that is a word.
Yeah, veteranness, so, I like that.
Thank you.
It is now.
It is now. Just like physicality. 2003, I created it in the WHO. But yeah, so I don't think I'm sitting here loving the signing. I don't dislike it. You need depth guys, and depth guys get $700K. And the fact that he took a haircut to do this, probably he was told this is the price or else thanks very much. And he decided to sign it. So I don't think it hurts anybody or him to get a one-year deal at that price. And I don't expect him to play a lot for the Jets. We'll let you weigh in on the contract and the thoughts on Brandon Tanev on the Boss Pizza Fan Line when we open it at 9, but we get into the Blue Bombers next. They host the Argos on Thursday and hit the practice field yesterday in preps for the Argos. That's next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Robertson College present Manitobaville. We're awarding $25,000 to put towards a project that enhances one special Manitoba community. To enter, rally friends and family in your community to make a video about your hometown. Tell us how $25,000 can make it an even better place to live. Is there something your community needs? Is there an existing project that requires more money? Can it enhance tourism and the lives of people who stay there? Record a video telling us about how your hometown would spend $25,000 and send it to us at tsn1290.ca before noon this Friday, July the 14th. Deadline is this Friday at noon, July the 14th. 10 finalists will be revealed on Monday, July 24th, and the public will vote for a winner to receive the $25,000. Manitobaville, make your hometown even prouder, presented by Robertson College and proudly supported by Chicken Chef, Star Ready to Move Homes, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, Merritt Contractors. For more info and official rules and regulations, visit tsn1290.ca. Jim Tilth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you. Lots to get to in this show, and we will open the Boss Pizza Fan Line at 9, of course. Paul Edmonds, Milt Stegall, Jason Cole, all going to join us as well. Gentlemen, let's get into the Blue Bombers, and I guess an injury update from head coach Mike O'Shea on some of the guys that got banged up in Friday night's loss to the Calgary Stampeders.
Yeah, Ian's going to be a little longer term. He's got an arm injury, and Tristan, it's a short week, so better to err on the side of resting a guy, and we'll evaluate again tomorrow and the next day.
So Ian Wild out long term.
That's a big loss, weak side linebacker, and you wonder who'll fill in that role behind him.
Kyle Knox was taking the reps at the weak side, but I'm a big fan of Ian Wild, and I know he has trouble staying healthy, but this is, if you're a Bomber fan, I think this should frighten you a little bit.
Well, he had problems staying healthy when, for some insane reason, he was playing middle linebacker for a season, which was, for him to even, you know, stay somewhat remotely healthy was a miracle there. It was just kind of a freak injury, right, where the hand just kind of gets caught in the turf and assuming something fractured or broke. But you saw it immediately, didn't you, the second he was out of the game, that things just kind of spiraled out of control for the Bomber defense. And he's a massive loss. There's no other way you can really put it.
It was him and Chris Randall that ended up getting hurt during that game, right? So it was a double whammy there. Yeah.
Defensive end Tristan Okopalaugo was a non-participant yesterday as well. O'Shea says they're going to evaluate him, but he is doubtful. It doesn't look good for Thursday's game against the Argos. Jackson Jeffcoat, according to our very own Darren Bauman reporting, was working in his place as well. So that's another injury on the defense heading into this battle against the Argos.
Which is ominous, right, when you got Ricky Ray sitting there and they're clipping along fairly well here, the second highest net offense in the CFL with Ricky Ray there, and their defense is playing surprisingly at a decent rate as well. So this is a real test. This is hardly a gimme or anything close to a free spot in the bingo card that it sort of looked like it was going to be just a couple months before the season, before they had their coaching staff in place. And certainly Mark Trestman has put an offense into play here to still play to Ricky Ray's strengths. And he's the old man is getting it done.
Just on paper right now, how do you think these two teams match up offense to defense, Argos versus Bombers?
Well, Ricky Ray, we're just saying here, right? You're talking about an offense coming into this game that's averaging well over 400 yards a game in a net offense sense. And then when you look at the Bombers and take into consideration that they're on average surrendering close to 400 yards a game, it's going to be a tough one here. The Argos have been disappointing as far as putting up points, where they're seventh in the league, but they're moving the ball a lot, so you'd think that they'll be able to convert on that. And you got these injury concerns with the Bomber defense. It sets up as a true test. You think of a game, you're talking about another home game. The Bombers coming out yesterday and today talking about how they've got to respond Thursday night for their fans, that the fans deserve better. Just an absolutely monumental game. I don't know if you could have envisioned there'd be this much importance placed on a game this early, this particular Bomber season. It's a huge game.
Especially not being 0-2 or 0-3. Like they already have a win under their belt. But this is, if you're looking at how the Bombers can win this game or how they can maybe really take control, I think it's going to have to be the D-line. If the D-line has a monster game, the Bombers can win this one by 10 or more points for sure. Because Ricky Ray, as good as he's been this season, you know, the elder statesman of the pivots around the league, if you get pressure up the middle on him, you know, we see pocket passes all the time. There's not a whole lot they can do about it. And if Ricky Ray has a pocket to work with all night long, it might be another 30-burger or a 40-burger against the Bomber defense. So it's, to me, how the D-line plays, if they're kind of the story for the Bombers 2-3 quarters into the game, that'll be, I think, the ultimate deciding factor as to who gets the W.
And the boys should get to them. The Argos have allowed the second most sacks, only second to BC, right? They've allowed 9 of them here, so the boys should be able to get to him every once in a while.
Will be a key part of the game to keep an eye on for sure. Now, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, this is the big show on TSN 1290 as we discuss the Bombers and the Argos battle coming up Thursday night at Investors Group Field. The Bombers did use their supplemental draft pick to pick up a Canadian receiver, Drew Wolitarski from the University of Minnesota. He was in camp yesterday, or at practice, I should say. Camp is over at practice yesterday, and head coach Mike O'Shea had these comments on their supplemental draft pick.
Yeah, he's spent some time, you know, getting in the playbook, and he'll need some more time to do that too. He's a good-looking kid. Looks like he's got good hands, obviously. It's been out there for, you know, his film shows that he's got very good hands, and we'll see how quickly he can pick it all up and then what it looks like in terms of the roster.
He truly looks good. Like, he truly looks, when you look at the young, like the measurables on him, what he accomplished at a big-time school in the States, I got a feeling this kid's going to be a major contributor here for years to come. He looks like the real deal. Knock on wood, if he gets fortunate with the whole health thing and can stay injury-free, he looks like the real deal. A massive find potentially here by the Bomber scouting department.
The measurables are all there. Like, he's got an NFL body. And we've been saying for a long time to get that kind of impact player at Canadian wide receiver or slot back, wherever he'll suit up. He could be the guy. And with the numbers he put up in Minnesota, and Minnesota's not a, you know, a college football powerhouse by any means, but they play in a power conference. And to put up the numbers he did as a senior, it's a little bit surprising he didn't get more of a look down south. But, you know, maybe for a couple of seasons at least, the Bombers can grab some real value out of this kid. And yeah, I kind of wonder, you know, once he gets the playbook down and all that sort of thing, you kind of wonder how long it is until he becomes a starter for the offense, because I kind of get the feeling that this isn't a project sort of player. This is a guy that they might look to put into the starting lineup sooner rather than later.
Oh, I think he's going to play. I just don't know when and how long it'll take him to, I guess, become familiar with the playbook and everything else. And it brings up the question of where. Is it Fioli Gaudino or is it Denmark? And a lot of people were asking about Denmark and hoping that he would have a better start to this season in the first two games. And I'm wondering where they might slot him in.
It's a fair question, and I don't know what the answer to that is. It'd be great if he was versatile enough to go in either hole, just from a ratio standpoint. But I would suspect it would be to start as a wide receiver there in front of Fiolo Gaudino, possibly. You know, but if he's got the flexibility to also go in at slot, that would be on the opposite side. Like, depending on what side you're talking about, maybe I wouldn't be surprised at all if he was versatile enough to cover a couple of different positions if needed.
Yeah, and Fioli Gaudino, of course, had 3 catches, 36 yards, and a touchdown.
He's looked pretty solid.
Last week, he's looked good. Clarence Denmark last week, 1 catch, 14 yards, and that was it for his production against the Stampeders. And, of course, you need somebody to throw the ball to him. But there's been a lot of people asking me about that. Like, why is he not more involved, or is it him, or...
And this is one of the concerns coming into this game here. The Toronto Argonauts have really gotten to the quarterback this year, boys, like ridiculously so. You won't believe the numbers if you don't know them. In the games that they've played so far, they have 14 sacks. That is good for number one overall in the league. Ottawa is second in the CFL for sacks this year with 7. So buckle up and look out. The Argos are coming at you in a huge way.
Yeah. Sean Lemon's been borderline monstrosity in that BC. I mean, I wonder how many of those they picked up in the BC game alone, but even against Ottawa.
You know, 5 Trevor, against Ottawa.
Yeah, I was going to say, Trevor Harris, you know, a pretty mobile quarterback, but it took every ounce of his power to not... I mean, it also goes back, like, this is the problem with the CFL, right? We don't have as many numbers on the website that we can kind of gather and sift through and see the true impact, but they lead the league in sacks for sure, but I wonder how many hits, how many hurries,
disruptions,
that
stuff,
sort of thing. Like, it's not like they're just tackling the quarterback. There's very seldom a clean pocket for any of these guys to throw to, and they've got some ball hawks in the secondary too. So it's going to be a tough one. And, you know, the Bombers O-line, I didn't think was a problem through two games, but you know, Nichols has taken a couple of big hits, especially against Calgary. So that's, you wonder how LaPolice is going to kind of maneuver his game plan, maybe have a little bit more quick hitters as opposed to trying to beat this Argos defense deep.
Well, this was the other question I was going to bring up to you guys today here on the Big Show, TSN 1290. What have you thought about Andrew Harris? Because he's a key cog in this offense. But over the first 2 weeks, I know you guys gave him Offensive Player of the Week in Saskatchewan. But hasn't scored yet, averaging about, well, look up his averages and stuff, but, you know, about 50-plus yards on the running the ball, about 50-plus yards receiving the ball. Do you want to see him get more involved in this offense?
My goodness. You're talking about a guy, like, you just gave some general numbers there.
Yeah, I'm going to look up his stats here.
So. But he is averaging about 100 all-purpose yards every game, probably more than that. So I'm just not sure what more you can ask him. I thought he's been fantastic, just a real workhorse, and you know, there's not a level of explosiveness to the Bomber run game, but you also need to take into consideration that the run game in the CFL in a general sense, you know, he's not carrying the pill 20 times a game sort of thing. So I think he's been fantastic. Whether it's blocking, running, receiving out of the backfield, I think he's been real strong.
And I'm not asking about him per se. I'm asking about the offense usage of him overall. He's got 14 receptions for 107 yards, average of 7.6 per catch. He has 23 carries for 89 yards, averaging 3.9 yards per carry. Longest run of the year is 10 yards.
Yeah, I mean, I've always liked Andrew Harris more out of the backfield as a pass catcher than as a runner anyways, but it's... The CFL, you know, football in general is a passing league, but the CFL has kind of morphed into this damn near 75-25 split of late.
Your lead back has 23 carries in 2 games.
Which is crazy.
That is remarkable. But that is the CFL right now. I think he's doing a fantastic job. Now, in an overall sense from the offense, there are just a couple of concerns here upcoming. When you're talking about the Argos who, you know, go five sacks in their games against Toronto, BC, and Hamilton, that beware of what's going on in that manner. The Bombers, in their two and outs, 42% of their series so far this year, their possessions have resulted in a two and out compared to their opponents at 31%. So that's a little concerning here. And also the Bombers with allowing a sack on 0.21 plays a sack per game sort of thing. So that's a little concerning. They're giving up sacks at a decent rate. And when you look at compare that to the Argos here, it's going to be really intriguing to see what Paul Appelese can do to slow down some of that push from the Argos.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And again, I no problem with Andrew Harris's game. I just thought with this O-line, they would be running the ball more. They would be using him a little bit more. It's only two games, and the game dictates that, I understand.
But that's, JT, after week two, I think it was this year, that 71 or 72% of the plays being called were pass plays. So it's you know, we're talking about we thought that he'd be running more, but the CFL in a large general sort of scale, they're just not running the ball. Like, it's mind-blowing when you're seeing some of the numbers at half and at the end of the games, how seldom teams are leaning on their backs. I'm not quite sure why that is, but it's certainly a league-wide type of phenomenon.
The BC-Montreal game was the first time that actual running backs were, like, used a lot and were stars of the game.
It's too bad.
I don't know, like, it's a sort of a phase probably more than anything, right? And even in that game, guys, you're talking about, you know, for the game, Jeremiah Johnson with 12 carries, Terrell Sutton with 9.
Yeah, that's really low in my mind.
Well, it's low because you're talking normally like 20 touches sort of thing that you want to see with the vast majority of coming on the ground like that, but it's just the way the CFL is right now. It is fascinating, hugely so.
We'll take a break and get your thoughts on the Bombers, the injuries, and what you expect from them against the Argos on the Boss Pizza Fan Line at 9 as well. Up next, we'll get back into the All-Star game tonight and talk about the men's volleyball program. We talked about the U19 Canadian basketball team making history. Our men's volleyball program did the same. That's coming up on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
TSN1290 and Robertson College present the return of the 10K Summer Selfie. We have $10,000 in cash prizes to award select selfie takers across Manitoba, and you could be one of the recipients to enter. Take a really good selfie at some point during the summer and post it before Thursday, August 31st to Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram using the hashtag 10K Summer Selfie. Selfie of the Summer presented by Robertson College could net you $5,000. Best Animal Selfie presented by Assiniboia Park Zoo could net you a $1,000 prize. As could Best Food and Drink Selfie presented by Booster Juice. Best Hair Selfie presented by Aura Hair Group. Best Outdoor Selfie presented by Lacoste Garden Center. And Best Smile Selfie presented by Toddlers to Teens. For more information, visit TSN1290.ca. Best Hair Selfie. I went and got my hair cut yesterday. I just don't take selfies, but
covering up with a cat. You know what, man?
If that's
I don't know how to break this to you.
Yesterday, that's what was happening.
I don't know how to break this to you, man, but your time has come and gone as the hair king. The man who now holds
this
that crown sits right across from you. Look at that lid.
You have to actually,
look at that lid. It's impervious.
Well, yeah. He's got 38 years on me.
It's got the density.
Doesn't
it's like
mean
a
it went anywhere.
Rainforest.
Like, it's not grain. It's not falling out. It's not, like, it's still
Who's,
there.
Yours isn't grain?
No.
No, you didn't lose the
Dude,
crown. It was just taken
I'm
from you.
I'm pretty sure I can see silver from here.
Well, that's not.
That's graying.
That's not grain.
We'll just call it silver?
It's the summer sun.
Oh.
I've been outside. Look at my tan.
You're
I look
scruffy.
Like Hasselhoff.
It sounds like Hasselhoff, but you're all scruffy, got a cap on.
You guys should see me eat a hamburger
this is like
at 4 a.m.
Your C or D game right now, man.
You know, it's just hard to listen to you and look you in the eye.
You won't look at me.
When I'm being blinded by what you're saying to me by the studio lights. Like, I mean,
I like this. I dig being a.
If Brandon
down to the
wants
wood.
To come at me, bro, he can. But you, who just basically motions your head, I don't. It's the same with Huss calling me out and trying to pass the title.
Yeah, wearing a Priest Holmes jersey, right?
Wearing a Priest Holmes jersey and Sheets to the Streets again, bedhead. That is, I think he cut his own hair one night. I don't know.
How many guys would see him in a Priest Holmes jersey and not even know who that is anymore, right? And for the love of God.
The reason I say that is because when we had the event at the Downs, who do we see grabbing the winning ticket after race one? Oh, it's Mr. Priest Holmes. Just, you know, just walking in last second and already having a winner one race in. It was funny.
That's funny. Let's get into the – I wanted to mention the U19 men's basketball team again because they returned home yesterday to a great quote. But we didn't mention this yesterday. We'll get to it right now. The Canadian men's volleyball team also did something historic that they've never done before, and that is win a medal at the World League. They won a bronze medal with a 3-1 win over the U.S., and it tasted like gold to them because they've never won a medal at the World League. The World League is one of the high-end, top-notch leagues of the international volleyball scene, I believe. And this is when I covered the men's program when they were here years and years ago. And the women's program that also has now left the city of Winnipeg, $1 million plus just to get into the tournament and play.
What?
Yeah, it's this is a high-end, top-notch tournament. And they won their first medal, a bronze medal over the U.S. So congratulations to Canadian men's volleyball as well on that feat. The Canadian men's U19 basketball program returned home. And such a phenomenal story. I've been following this ever since they won it. I failed to mention yesterday that James Wagner, the Winnipegger, is an alternate on that team, and he's a U of M Bison product. He's playing for Bisons and Kirby Shep. Kirby Shep coaches this U19 team, and a lot of these players that won the gold medal, the U of M coach and Winnipegger as well, he had a devastating knee injury this season. So he went to training camp with him in Toronto but did not go on the trip. But he has a big influence and part on what this team did as well. But interesting quote from Rowan Barrett Jr., the 17-year-old who had 38 points and 13 boards versus the U.S., led the scoring against 27 points in the quarterfinal as well, Barrett did. Just he is the future and could be the number one overall pick in the draft in a couple of years. He had an interesting quote yesterday when he got back, he said.
Yeah, just fresh off the plane, and they asked him what his future was going to be and said, well, I'm going to go to university, make the NBA, and become a star. That was it. He just had it all done. Sitting there, young-faced, got the braces on, you know, still in high school for Pete's sake, talking about, yeah, that's what I'm doing, man. It was absolute sort of matter-of-fact, right? Here, got the medal. I'm going to be going to university or college and then going to the NBA and becoming a star.
I don't know if that's awesome. That at that age. You think it's awesome?
Well, it's to have that, you know, you need that level, that sort of that bulletproof level of confidence, right? That's what makes players great. And he just has no doubt what direction he's going or where he's going to end up. And I think that's awesome.
Yeah, and it's I like, to me, that's confidence, not cockiness, where it's just like, look, this is what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I'm right. Not bragging. I'm just, this is what, I'm just letting you know it's ahead
options,
of time.
A, B, and C, yeah. Right there.
And yeah. It blows my mind that this kid, and he is a kid despite his size, is 3 years away from being drafted. He has 2 more years of high school. And I was listening to ESPN, too, and they were saying, one and done, no doubt about it. So you'll see him at Kentucky or Duke, and he will be a top 3 pick the following year.
Isn't that something? Again, another remarkable pick out of Canada. Like, what's, gee whiz.
Just think
awesome.
Of the Olympics. I don't know when it'll be, but you'll have some kind of a group of Wiggins, this Barrett kid. Like, there's a lot of high-end, and you kind of wonder if, you know, me. Once LeBron slows down a little bit, I'm just saying, maybe a showdown against the U.S. isn't as fearsome as we once thought.
I guess the quote stands out to me because when I was going into grade 11, I said the exact same thing. And then by the middle of grade 11, I was like, oh, maybe I should take some college courses and plan something else. By the way, the Major League Baseball All-Star Game does not decide home field advantage. They changed that this year. So that
CBA,
will be decided. Yep. Yeah. Yep. So that's great news. Thanks. To one of our listeners, just looking
Mark.
It up here, Brett Chaps, yeah, Chabs, yeah. So thanks, Brett. So we were discussing that earlier. If they change it, we'll take a break. We talked extension for Paul Maurice yesterday, whether he will get one or not. We'll do the same for Kevin Cheveldayoff next on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
TSN 1290 and the Walt Morris Group of Companies, including Winnipeg Dodge, present the first ever TSN 1290 Golf for Kids Classic Tuesday, August 15th at Southwood Golf and Country Club. This is a Texas Scramble Best Ball Tournament with proceeds to benefit the Children's Hospital Foundation of Manitoba as well as Kids Sport Manitoba. Registration is $150 per person or $500 per foursome. Includes 18 holes of golf, cart rental, pre- and post-game buffet-style food and drink. Freebies plus chances to win cool prizes. There will also be fun planned for select holes throughout the course, hosted by United Firefighters of Winnipeg, Local 867, Viscount Gort Hotel, FXR Adrenaline Unlimited, Mr. Lube, Ashley Furniture, Windeck Limited, Darcy Bain Physiotherapy, J&M Window and Door Company, Santa Lucia Pizza, our good friends at Royal Sports, who are sponsoring this Power Hour right now, and the Pint Winnipeg. Space is limited and available on a first-come, first-served basis. Register now at tsn1290.ca. That will be a lot of fun. The Big Show, Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you, 6 minutes past the hour. And, gentlemen, we talked about it yesterday with Paul Maurice, and if these extensions that were reported last season were on their way, and then put on hold by Paul Maurice. We talked about the coach and whether he should get one and what we thought it would look like if he did get one and when it would come out. We'll do the same for Kevin Cheveldayoff, general manager, as well today. He's heading into the final year of his contract. I don't know if lame duck status applies to a general manager in the National Hockey League like it does a head coach, but do you think an extension's coming? Do you think it's deserved? And if so, when and where? Or do you think one's not on its way?
Yeah, when and where, I don't know, but I have no doubt that Cheveldayoff will be extended, and not sure how long or anything like that, but to me it's deserved, certainly at this point in time, and the term of it, I'm not sure, but would not be surprised whatsoever to find that he gets extended.
I mean, it's really hard to argue with the body of work from this summer, at least, where two holes, can you fill them? And they were, right? Got the top goalie, arguably, on the free agent market and kind of shored up the depth on the left side of the defense. So, I mean, on paper, this really is an impressive roster. On paper. Now it's just, can these pieces kind of meld together and fit properly to really make what should be a playoff team? Like, on paper, this is a playoff team, but it's just, it remains to be seen if they can get it done on the ice together. I guess the only question at this point with Chevy is, will there be any kind of in-season adjustment if this team struggles out of the gate? And will he be willing, and or how willing he would be to pull the trigger on kind of a mini shakeup if something kind of goes haywire to start off with? I don't know what that could be. But that would probably, I guess that would be the only question at this point, right? Because the draft record is solid and you filled the rest of the roster with veterans.
To me, it's more of the moves you make in trying to get a playoff push into the playoffs. A disaster start is really hard to imagine that sort of thing happening. And I also find it difficult to look at this roster and say, yeah, that's a playoff team. Because then you're, who are you going to look at the Central and say they're not a playoff team outside of Colorado?
Yeah, I'm not even going that route necessarily. I'm just saying talent-wise, on paper, when you look at the players.
As far as no weaknesses
yeah,
at this point
not,
in time.
Not will they be, will they not be a playoff team? You look at the players on there. You know, the weaknesses are mostly inexperience-related. So on paper, he's built a playoff team, I think at least. But it's just a matter of, is it good enough in a really tough Central this year?
I agree with you. I think it is a playoff team on paper. We talk about the draft all the time with Kevin Cheveldayoff. We talk about the lack of trades all the time with Kevin Cheveldayoff. And we talk about the lack of postseason appearances, save for the one with GM Kevin Cheveldayoff. We rarely talk about the cap management with Kevin Cheveldayoff, which I think to this point has been outstanding. And the Mark Scheifele contract to Blake Wheeler at 5.6, Brian Little, you know, you go on and on, albeit they have a rookie in Patrick Laine playing in the top six as well. You don't have
many guys, you don't have one player making $7 million on the forward line. You do have one on the blue line at 7.6 for Dustin Byfuglien. You have Toby Enstrom, 5.7. That is going to expire, and you can we can debate that as well. But I the cap management going forward, where he literally, and this is going to be interesting to me, on I do believe he is going to get an extension, gentlemen. I'm wondering for how many years, because next year there is a ton of work to do. RFAs include Adam Lowry, Joel Armia, Nikolai Ehlers, Marco Dano, Nicholas Patan, Tanev again, Scarboza, who was just signed to a one-year deal. I don't think that's going to be an issue, but Toby Enstrom is a UFA. Jacob Trouba is an RFA. Josh Morrissey and Julian Melchiori. So to me, like, this is – it's interesting that his contract is running out when most of those are as well. So I do think he's going to get extended. I do like the draft. I do like the cap work he's done. I'm not a big fan of making a trade in order to make a trade. I've always felt that when this team was playoff ready, they would spend and sort of make some moves. They did it when they were playoff ready. They made some trades and made some acquisitions. And now I think they're ready again, and he's signed some free agents. But the bottom line is, it's a performance-based business, so you have to get into the playoffs. And I'm just not sure if an extension's coming prior to the season, training camp, during the season. But I do think he is going to get an extension. But I think it's, you know, it's key whatever the extension is. Say it's 2 to 3 years. Say it's 3 years extension. What he does over the next 2 years and what this team does over the next 3 years, I think will dictate whether he sees the end of that extension. I think there's a lot of pressure on both him and Paul Maurice, and maybe more so on Paul Maurice. I don't question that he would make a move. He's done it before in the head coaching position when he felt it was necessary, albeit Claude Noel wasn't his pick. Paul Maurice is. And he really picked Paul Maurice twice as his head coach. He picked him to replace Claude Noel midseason. They were going to have a feeling out process. And then in the offseason, you know, he could have gone a different direction. He stayed with him. So it's going to be interesting to me. I do think there's an extension coming. I'm just wondering how long and when we're going to hear about it.
He's going to get more than Paul Maurice, says. You know, typically GMs get at least two coaches, right? With Claude Noel not being his guy or his pick sort of thing, and with Paul Maurice being that, he'll get another head coach still for sure. I don't think, and you're talking about the situation, all the cap management, all the rest of it, you also have to take into consideration in that the budget that's put in front of him, where he, true, you know, that plays a huge role in from people looking at it, managing the cap, right? If his budget is less than what the salary cap ceiling is and all the rest of it. But I think he's done a real solid job. It's not a spotless record or anything like that. Everyone can bring up three or four errors or questionable type moves, but you can do that right across the board in the NHL.
Yeah. Yeah. And we all know the bad deals, right? Like, they've been well documented, but yeah, as much as everyone likes to get on Chevy for some of those, arguably the best value contract of the last two or three seasons,
yep,
is playing number one center for the Jets. Blake Wheeler should be making about $2 million more than he's making, probably the same. Well, Brian Little should certainly be making more than 4.7, whatever that value is, probably at least $1 million more there. Like, there's a number of deals that you can look at.
Mathieu Perreault.
Up and down the right? Raws, up, yeah. Maybe more so at forward, but and even the Trouba situation, right, where, you know, maybe a different GM would have panicked there and made the move to ship him out and get less of a return. But, you know, he's only making $2.8 million this season and last as well. Like, it has there, like Troy said, there's no perfection, flawless record for Chevy. But I think it's fair to say that right now the hits, not by an overwhelming margin, but the hits certainly overshadow some of the misses that he's had so far.
When I discussed this with somebody who's not a fan of Kevin Cheveldayoff, I said, well, he swings and he's swung and missed, but I don't think he was hitting going for a home run. Like, some of the moves he makes are mostly minor, and they said, well, that's my problem. But then we got into the discussion of trying to hit home runs and moves and trades and everything else is tough to do in this city and everything else. So I have no problem with the job he's done, but how much emphasis is on making the playoffs in the tenure for him now? Like, if there is an extension coming, what, say, Troy, you say that you don't see them making the playoffs this year. What's the window for Chevy to make the playoffs with this roster?
Well, I just think that simply attaching do they make the playoffs or not, it's just a little bit too much of a simple type of measuring stick. I don't know what the window is, but you would think as this team matures, certainly the next year or two, they've got to be in that sort of a situation within the Central, most certainly. I do think, though, like I was saying, it's quite possible you could see this team improve quite dramatically. And still, depending on what transpires in the Pacific, if there are only four teams from the Central, this team could improve quite a bit and still miss a wicked competitive playoff run. There's a real good possibility of that transpiring. So I don't know if it's this year or next year that they need to make the playoffs, but I think more so than making the playoffs, the team in an overall general sense just needs to improve in an overall way. And hey, and remember that Chevy isn't, it's not on Chevy what's going on with the defensive system or what's happening with the special team sort of thing, right? But there will come a point in time where he's got to make a decision, wondering about the extension with Cheval Dayoff and how that whole thing plays out, or even just moving forward, with Maurice or not. Like, that's going to weigh on him, when to make a move, yay or nay, with Paul Maurice going forward and all the rest of it. So long as the cupboards are stocked and he's, you know, making the good deals and all the rest of it, that's what you got to... I don't think this team making the playoffs falls on Chevy. It's more looking at the personnel. Who's in place? What are the contracts? All the rest of it.
This is the Big Show on TSN 1290. You and I think they're a playoff team this year. What's the window you think he has to make the postseason as a GM?
Well, I mean, I look at this team and how they've been built and the relative lack of excuses that they have right now. And I think they got to make the playoffs this year. And I think they should make the playoffs this year. The team's good enough. All the pieces are in place. I know they're in a tough division, but I mean, a lot of teams are in tough in the NHL. That's just kind of the state of the NHL right now, right? It's parity. It's tough to win a lot of games, but you got to do it now. Like, the time for waiting is over. To me, there's no excuse for this team not to make the playoffs this year.
So if they're in the hunt,
that is a remarkable statement to me.
I totally understand what you're saying, because I look at the Central Division too, and I'm wondering how they do it. But I think progression. I think that, you know, some development from the players that we've seen and getting better. I do think that they're heading into their seventh season under this regime of Kevin Cheval Dayoff. I agree. All the pieces are in place. He's done his job. If they don't get in, he's got to figure out why that is, and he's got to do something about it. And whether that's coaching, whether that's making a trade, maybe that's, you know, changing the core of this team, I don't know. But I agree with his patience and the way he's structured this team and everything he's put together on it. But I don't know if this is the year I have them making the playoffs. I think it's a big disappointment if they don't. But if it's not this year, it's next year. They have to be in the playoffs, in my mind, or else something has to be changed with the roster they have.
And I think inevitably they will be in the playoffs next year. And I'm not, like, that's sort of a execution or results, right? And I'm going to look more at, instead of the end result, look at this team. This team is everything on paper leans towards it being improved from last year. And it's not hard to project with where the core and the upcoming stars are with this team and look to the season after this, thinking there's going to take another step here. Most certainly, when you're looking at the direction of the team, they are certainly poised to improve for X number of years to come. And I think that's a massive feather in Kevin Cheval Dayoff's hat.
That's true. But there is also a bit of a limited window as well, where, like, just how the NHL works, right? And JT mentioned all the RFAs and a UFA and Brian Little. So,
like, that's where Chevy's going to make his money, right?
Yeah, that's where he's going to make his money. But it also, I think, heightens the importance for this year, where there might not, you know, with everything kind of working together here, there might not be a better year to kind of really go for it, in a sense.
Yeah, and that can happen, you know, picking up a piece or two similar to the playoff run they did a few years back. But also, everything you just said there, Wicks, to me, that puts a heat lamp on Paul Maurice. Right? And that's why, to me, an extension for Paul Maurice is hell no. If I'm with the ownership group of True North, I'm like, we have to see what this guy's going to do this year, and then we can move forward.
Yeah, but to me, Paul Maurice, to Kevin Cheveldayoff, is no different than re-signing Brian Little or bringing Perreault back. If you believe in him and he's your guy, you sign him just like you would a player. Like, if he's done what you asked him to do the past couple of years, if he's gone the direction you do, you get along, you work well, you feel like you've developed these players enough the past 2 years to where this roster is ready, I don't see Cheveldayoff extending Paul Maurice any different than him extending a player that he believes in.
And I have trouble connecting the dots talking about a player who's going to give you X number of points per game and have a solid, you know, 200-foot type of game. I have trouble with that, and then looking at a situation like Paul Maurice where you can pinpoint 2 or 3 points that absolutely must improve, and that needs to be shown through the production of the team this year.
What are your thoughts on an extension for Kevin Cheveldayoff, and if and when one is coming and how long? We'll do that on the Boss Pizza Fan Line at 9 o'clock today on The Big Show. Up next, McGregor and Mayweather, they'll look at each other today live. It'll be interesting. We'll discuss on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 Summer Street Team is at Winnipeg's best events all summer long. We'll be at concerts, sporting events, charity fundraisers, and more. And we'll be bringing our Spin to Win wheel with you for a chance to win great stuff. It's for you, is what I'm trying to say. Stuff like Jets gear, Tim Hortons and McMunn and Yates gift cards, a Burton snowboard with bindings from Alter Ego Sports, and weekend road trip getaways from Explore Egan, Minnesota, with plenty of bonuses on that trip to Egan Mini as well. Here's where you can find us next. MTS Super Spike, July 21st and 22nd at Maple Grove Rugby Park. For more information on these great events and the TSN 1290 Summer Street Team, visit tsn1290.ca. Jim, Troy, and Brandon on The Big Show. A short segment here, gentlemen, because Paul Edmonds is going to join us, voice of the Jets, at the bottom of the hour. But Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor will have their first press conference today. They'll face each other and the media at 4:30 Central Time. Are you going to watch?
I will do everything possibly to find the live feed for that. Absolutely 100%. I want to watch every single second.
Yeah, this is more interesting and intriguing to me than the fight. I would pay $95 to watch these two chirp back and forth and to see them fight in the ring.
I'm telling you, they really truly could sell this pay-per-view, and I think that they'd make their fair share. Yeah.
I believe I read somewhere, and I'm going to – please don't quote me on the numbers, but it's something – I don't know. There's like 100 or whatever media you can accredit to, and it's like full.
Oh, yeah.
Before they even announced the date for this press conference, the media request for it, it has absolutely run them out. So.
What McGregor's going to be all over him for the taxes. You know, he's going to have one or two just outrageous quotes. Like, there'll be I don't know if McGregor's going to catch Mayweather in the ring with any bombs, but you know a couple will land today.
McGregor already said Mayweather should have paid his taxes and stayed retired. And that's before the press conference. So we'll obviously discuss what transpires today at 4:30 later on tomorrow's Big Show as well. Paul Edmonds, voice of the Jets, is next on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is a proud supporter of the 5th Annual Stars for Special Golf Tournament, Tuesday, August 23rd at Glendale Golf and Country Club. It's a Texas Scramble-style tournament with proceeds going to Special Olympics Manitoba. Lots of fun throughout. Each team is assigned a celebrity golfer as well to play for with the 9 holes. It includes dinners, draws, silent auction, and much more. For more details, visit specialolympics.mb.ca. Once again, that's specialolympics.mb.
And that's another 9-hole tournament, right?
Nine hole.
That's the thing, man. You know what? All the tournaments out there, take heed. Nine holes makes a lot of sense. People always complain about the 6, 7, 8 hour days for golf tournaments. Nine holes is the way to go.
There are worse ways to spend a day too, but the Pan Am Clinic Foundation one I went to was nine holes. It was the first time I went to a nine hole tournament.
I think it makes a lot of sense, man.
Had a lot of time to visit prior, visit after.
Really, most everybody there. Nobody's really there for the golfing. To me, I helped to put on a tournament for cystic fibrosis for a lot of years, and boy, it's an immense amount of work. Got all kinds of love and respect for everyone over the years. With CF that helped with that. But when you're talking about so many of these tournaments are for charity, most everyone's there mostly to help the charity out. So I just think it going to nine holes, it makes it a lot easier for everyone to be able to take part as well.
Our next segment is with the voice of the Winnipeg Jets, Mr. Paul Edmonds, and it's brought to you by Gauthier Chevrolet on McPhillips. This month at Gauthier, 20% off is back on select vehicles. Plus, buy a new or used vehicle to get a trip to Vegas. And get a trip to Vegas, I should say. Gauthier Chevrolet, 1400 McPhillips at Inkster. Mr. Edmonds, how are you today?
I'm great, guys. So if you go down to nine holes in your charity tournament, does your charity tournament still make as much money for one day as it did when you were playing 18 holes?
You're darn right, my friend. You charge the exact same amount. I think people would gobble it up the exact same way.
Really?
I believe so.
Okay, what about,
I don't know.
Okay, what about, just for instance, what about the extra liquor sales over the nine holes? What about the extra mulligans that you might sell?
Well,
those types of things.
I think the course typically makes the liquor sales, right? And the mulligans and such.
But the sponsored holes, you don't see. Like in the nine-hole one I was at, they used all 18 holes, but yeah, there were nine holes we didn't get to, and a lot of the sponsors that were on the holes, which raised money for the charities, we didn't get to. We didn't get to see their product.
You might not see the sponsored holes, but they'll all be out there, right? You can still sell this 18 sponsor. I think everyone involved with all those tournaments, it's not really about the golf, really, right? Like, everybody seems to be taking part in those, to me, to help out and be the charities, to be a part of the community sort of thing. I think it could work, boys. I think it's they're going in that direction right now.
Yeah, the one direction I've sort of noticed in some of these events that I've played in have been starting a little bit earlier in the morning, having your usual shotgun start, kind of getting through with a little bit less teams, so you're not having, you know, every hole has one and one A and one B at it. Yeah. And then so you've eliminated the extra foursome or fivesomes at holes. And then instead of doing the big dinner and prize thing, it's real quick afterward. It's in and out with dinner, buffet style, couple of prizes. Thanks very much for coming out. And that whole thing is wrapped up in less than an hour in around there when the golf is done. And you're out of there by about 5 o'clock. So, you know, I was at the U of W one just last week or a week and a half ago, and it was pretty quick. So I think they're cognizant and trying to move people through a lot quicker.
Yeah.
But I don't see, you know, I don't see a problem with somebody trying to go down to nine holes and trying to generate the amount of revenue that they've always made off of 18, but shortening it down by, what, 3 or 4 hours for the day.
Because I know for us boys, and I think this is an interesting conversation now, because all, like everybody listening, is taking part in probably in some of these golf tournaments. For us, when we were hosting this Cystic Fibrosis Breath of Life Classic, boys, most of our money was made off of the auctions, the silent auction and the live auctions. Not really a bunch had to do with the golfing per se.
I will say this. I understand golf tournaments, 18 holes, are a very, very long day. But personally, I've always had a very, very good time during that long day. So.
But it is the number one complaint you hear, right?
Oh, yeah. Like, when I MC golf tournaments, like I MC the U of M Bison one a couple of years ago. I think it was out at the Bridges Golf Course. And one thing I got, a lot of people told me, is they liked the fact that when they came in for dinner, I started. Mm-hmm. Like, they did the thing that they said, it's a long day. Yep. It's you're out in the course 6, 7
That's
hours.
So Paulie was touching
on,
right?
Get going. Yeah, like Paul said. Mm-hmm. So like Paul was mentioning, when they come in to eat dinner, start the proceedings. Yep. Like, don't wait for dinner
to be
over.
That's the worst part,
stuff,
right?
So,
that hanging around, waiting. Yep.
But everybody runs it different and how they want to. But like I said, I've always had. Paul, you must have had a good time too, eh?
But you also have no kids at home, no fat, like waiting for someone to get your butt.
That's true.
Right?
I got nowhere else to be.
That's right.
I like that point. Thank you. I got nowhere else to go.
I thought the worst part was for when when you were actually auctioned off, Jimmy.
yeah, that's
when the night begins,
well.
Baby.
A long night, eh?
Well, an interesting MC. That, that are you? See, now you're referencing Ron Duguay when I MC'd the Dale Hawerchuk one, and I think Ron Duguay would argue the night wasn't long enough. He'll argue to this day, I could have kept going, Jumbo. Anyways, we digress. Paul Edmonds, the voice of the Jets, is joining us now. We'll get your thoughts on the $700,000 one-year one-way deal for Brandon Tanev.
Well, I think that they wanted to keep him. They wanted to give him another opportunity to they wanted to control him for another year. They wanted to see exactly what he has and if he can really push into sort of a fourth-line checking role. And as we discussed yesterday with Hustler, maybe a penalty-killing role to go along with that as well. Here's what they like. They like the kid's attitude. He's come in. He's worked hard. He's kept his mouth shut. The other part of this is he has NHL speed. He was gifted with that, from the womb. So that's why he was able to be fast-tracked right out of college and into the NHL. So it doesn't cost them a whole lot. It's basically the minimum. It's a one-way deal. So even if he goes down to the AHL, he gets his NHL salary, which is always very good for guys that now are into the mid-20s. There's no risk in this, and it gives him another opportunity to kind of find his way into the NHL on a permanent basis. If, in fact, it works out really well, maybe they sign him to 2 or 3 years after this. If not, then maybe he showcased himself for somebody else in the National Hockey League. So, it's a depth move for the Winnipeg Jets for sure. He understands that, I'm sure, but the Winnipeg Jets didn't want to let him get away. I think they still wanted to see him over the course of one more year, and they've got that here. So, like I said, not much of a risk for either the team or the player, but everybody's happy because it buys another 12 months, and certainly it's a good opportunity for Brandon Tanev to try to find his way into a fourth-line role permanently with the Winnipeg Jets.
Paulie, I don't think we talked to you about this, and I believe you spent a whole bunch of time down there, but just going back to the development camp real quick, and maybe your final take from a couple of aspects of the development camp this year.
Well, there was a couple of guys that really jumped out for me, and I know there was a really big crowd there, and the game was fairly swiftly played. The pace was very quick, and I think Team White, if memory serves, kind of, on the scoreboard, at least, kind of handed it to Team Blue. But the game, I think, was a little bit closer than that. But, Brendan Lemieux was a guy that stood out for me, as he should in that environment, right? He's been around for a few years. He scored a couple of goals, including one on a penalty shot. The best player on the ice was Kyle Connor, as you would expect. He just looked a little bit more solid on his skates that way. I mean, he always had that world-class speed, but he stood out to me like Jack Roslovic did last year at D-Camp. So, maybe he's prepared to and ready to make that step into the NHL full-time, which I think the Winnipeg Jets would love to see this year. There's another guy, though, too, that really impressed me. And this guy's development, and it's one of the reasons that I think why they signed him to a contract basically after his last year in Prince George. But Jansen Harkins, I thought, looked real strong up the middle. He controlled the puck. He controlled plays. He distributed very well, took some shots when he had the opportunities. I'm not saying that he's going to push into the middle of the lineup for the Winnipeg Jets this year, but he might be a guy that got a little bit of a taste of the Manitoba Moose last year after his season was done in Prince George, to maybe be more of a player and a go-to player for them this year as he continues his transition and is transcending up to the National Hockey League. So, there was guys like that that I really thought looked real solid. There was some guys that, like Eric Foley, I was looking for. He didn't do as much as he did last year. There was some, I thought, defensemen that moved the puck fairly well. But like I said, it was pretty quick, and the guys that you would expect to be the cream rising to the top were exactly that. But to the surprise for me, not in a bad way, and not that he really jumped off the page and it surprised me from that perspective, but just how he really looked was Jansen Harkins. And I wonder if they're going to send him back to Penticton this year. And if they do, what he looks like there to take the next step into training camp. So that would be a name that I would look for, certainly a training camp for Winnipeg Jets fans if they're trying to put somebody on their radar screen. But, you know, as I said, Kyle Connor was the best player on the ice, and Brendan Lemieux impressed as well.
Paul Edmonds, the voice of the Jets, is joining us this morning on the Big Show, TSN 1290, 43 minutes past the hour. Paul, we were talking about an extension for Kevin Cheveldayoff, and just, I guess, where he's at after six seasons with the roster he's built. A lot of talk about playoffs this year, and maybe not playoffs this year on this program. Where do you think he's at with his tenure with the Jets and what he's put together here? And what is the, you know, the emphasis is the postseason every year, I understand that, but particularly with this year coming up.
I think Kevin has, and I know that he certainly has his critics, and when you get into that role and that job, you're going to have them, whether you've done a great job or something in along the lines of mediocre, or people consider you to be a bad general manager. But I think that Kevin's done a very good job as a steward of this team. He has built this roster through what they inherited from Atlanta to looking at the prospect pool and then the guys that have pushed in the last 2 years into the lineup, into the National Hockey League. I mean, this talent pool is very deep, and that's a testament to Kevin's leadership and judgment on letting his scouts do their job and having the scouts that he wants, that he believes can bring this talent into Winnipeg, and they have certainly done that. I think that he's done a real fine job when it comes to negotiating salaries, maybe having to overpay at times to get guys to stay here, but now those contracts don't look like they've overpaid at all. I think of Blake Wheeler's and some other guys, and look at even Mark Scheifele's at this point right now, and he's got him locked up for another 7 years after this. So I think he's done a very good job of steering the organization and its top players in the right direction financially without overspending, without being willy-nilly when it comes to adhering to the salary cap and making sure you're not right up against it and painting yourself into a corner. I think he's gone out and ticked a couple of boxes that a lot of people had really been able to criticize him for, where he didn't reach out into the free agent pool in the offseason and go and get some high names or guys that you would consider to be upgrades to your team that were sought after free agents. Steve Mason is that. Dmitry Orlov. I forgot his last already. The defenseman they got as well.
Kulikov?
So, you know, yeah, Kulikov. Dmitry Kulikov. I'm sorry.
That's
so, you know, he ticked a couple boxes that he hadn't in the past, with, you know, the exception of his Sean Matthias or Matthew Perreault. So I think that he's done a real good job, and it's not necessarily him that gets the team to the playoffs. I think that he's provided an environment for this team to the playoffs. He's done his job that way. He's filled these holes this offseason that they wanted to go and get. And as a result of that, I don't see why you would not extend Kevin Cheveldayoff at the opportunity to do so.
Paulie, I was listening yesterday on Hustler and Edmonds, and you guys were talking to Steve Simmons, and I found it a real fascinating conversation where defensively and at the plate, the overall lack of speed by the Toronto Blue Jays is playing a large role in some of their struggles this year.
Well, they've banged into a league-leading amount of double plays. Their batting average with runners in scoring position is second last in the league. Those two stats for me tell you a lot about a stumbling and sputtering offense. It's station-to-station baseball, and you just can't play that way all the time. There's a term for it, and it's called clogging up the bases. And you pretty much need an extra base hit every single time you're up to advance somebody two bases instead of, you know, being able to hit and run or run and hit, which the Blue Jays can't be able to do. This lack of speed with this team has been a criticism for many years here under John Gibson, although, you know, it hasn't necessarily been his fault. He has to manage the players that he has. But Jose Bautista is no leadoff batter. He doesn't provide any speed that way. You know, his on-base percentage isn't what you would say is great for a leadoff guy to get you on, to get you started, to get you rolling in an inning. They're certainly devoid of some speed in their lineup. And when Devin Travis went down this year, I mean, that took the only speed guy really that they had at the top of their order right out. So I'm not surprised to hear some rumblings here that or to even hear or read that Mark Shapiro has said that they could be buyers and sellers at the deadline here. And there's now talk that they're interested in getting D. Gordon from the Miami Marlins, which would be a huge upgrade for them. You know, they're putting 40,000 people into the building every night. There's interest in this team. Teams for the postseason the last 2 years. There's a real good nucleus there. There's a pitching staff that's pretty decent. They've got a great closer who's only 22 or 23 years old and one of the best. The guy converts every single time he takes the ball in a save situation practically. So, you know, what do they need? Well, they need an injection of speed. And D. Gordon, who it's rumored that the Miami Marlins want to go out and move because his salary is hitting almost 300, his on base is 350, he's got 32 steals. You would plug him in into the top of the order here as your leadoff guy and let everybody else fall down and trickle down in the lineup and into spots that they're way more comfortable in. And I think that you start to see the Blue Jays come back a little bit. If they could swing that deal, what they would have to get give up, I don't know. And what they have certainly available to give up that Miami would want, I'm not certain about that. But they are one of three teams that are interested in D. Gordon. This would be a huge upgrade right now for the Toronto Blue Jays. And if they are truly going into it with the mindset that they're going to be a buyer, they're only 5.5 games out. This might just be a piece that can get them a little closer and vault ahead of some of those teams and start to challenge with 3 months still left in the season, 3+ months still left in the season to try to get to a playoff spot by the end of September.
I love the idea of D. Gordon being a Blue Jay. That'd be great to, at the top of the order. Paulie, we appreciate the time as always. Thanks for doing it. Great stuff and enjoy the rest of your week.
My pleasure, guys. Talk to you next week.
Thanks so much, Paulie.
We'll take a break and be back with NHL news and notes next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to present MTS Super Spike July 21st and 22nd at Maple Grove Rugby Park. Team registration deadline is this Friday at midnight at superspike.ca. Choose any skill level, recreational, intermediate, or competitive. Headliners on the center stage this year include Sam Roberts Band, the Lytics, the Treble, and more. Weekend passes for all the shows are on sale now at superspike.ca as well. Or keep listening to TSN 1290 this week for your chance to win tickets. We'll do that a little later in this morning's program. All proceeds from this year's event go to Volleyball Manitoba, Kids Sport Manitoba, and the True North Youth Foundation. Jim, Troy, and Brandon on The Big Show, TSN 1290, NHL news and notes time. And it came out yesterday, gentlemen, with all the wheeling and dealing Steve Yzerman needed and has been doing. He signs Tyler Johnson to a 7-year, $35 million contract, $5 million per season. Your thoughts on the deal for Tyler Johnson?
Solid signing. Can't wait to see what Tampa Bay, how much noise are they going to make at the Atlantic this year? And you know, Stamkos, what's he going to accomplish this year? What level is his game at? Tampa Bay is one of the real cool teams to watch upcoming this year.
Yeah, I was taking a look at the odds for the Stanley Cup odds for next season. And Tampa Bay was a team I was looking at it, maybe sprinkling a little Parmesan on that. But the site I saw had them either third or fourth in the NHL in terms of odds. And it went Penguins, Oilers, and then the Lightning at three or four. And that's a team, like, it just seems like an almost automatic for a bounce back for that team, doesn't it? Where it's just one of those odd years where sometimes a contending team gets injuries and things just kind of fizzle out for them early. Like it felt like if they had another two or three games to sneak into the playoffs, that if they could have got in, that would have been, you know, maybe the Nashville Predators East version. But it's another, I mean, Steve Yzerman is almost flawless with his record, isn't he? It's just another real solid move by the Lightning.
I saw some of those numbers for Calgary. And I just saw a thing where we're showing some, like, I was surprised at how high, for instance, the Kings are more favorites to win the Cup than the Flames. And I thought that was really surprising that the Flames are being considered in that sort of a light. And the Jets, one of the longer shots in and around with Buffalo and Philadelphia. Of course, the Flyers don't have a chance, but the Jets just hovering around in the bottom third for sure of favorites. But it is pretty. I believe it was Edmonton is the second favorite team to go capture the cup this year, and Chicago Kings. Still tied, or Chicago's there with Dallas as the third favorite.
Dallas was that was the other team. Dallas was up there too.
Chicago's not going to make the playoffs. The Kings really.
In front of the Flames, yes. Like
just name recognition, I guess, right?
Well, and a healthy Johnny Quick, I guess. I don't know.
Three teams from the Central in the top 12 as far as favorites, or top 10. So three teams from the Central in the top 10 to go win the Cup as far as odds go, with Chicago, Dallas, and Minnie.
The 7 years of the Tyler Johnson.
And Nashville, sorry. Four teams. Four teams in the top 10 from Central. And you know what? The Jets, I see the Jets making the playoffs.
I do.
Oh, just give
it a rest. Winning the Cup.
Well, guess what you have to do to go in the Cup, Jimmy?
Go to the Pacific.
You want to go at me that way? You think the Kings are better than the Jets this year? In that pool, they're an odds-on favorite to win the Cup.
Yeah, compared to the Jets and the Flames. So fair point. Touche, pussycat.
Johnson's deal year by year, $5
million, don't 6 need point, to be snarky.
$6.75 million, 5.5, then 3.75, then back up to 5.5, then back down to 3.75, then up to 4.75, includes a no-trade clause and a limited no-trade clause near the end. Do you think Tyler Johnson's a $5 million on average per year guy?
Yeah, I do.
He had 45 points in 66 games last year. The previous year, 38 points in 69 games. The year before that is where he really made his name, 72 points in 77 games.
Well, gee whiz. Absolutely, he's a $5 million guy. Like to me, he's got good possession numbers and points per game. You want to go – I tell you what, if he starts to resemble anything from 14-15, averaging 0.94 points per game, even with what he's doing here – in averaging, like any time you're north of a half a point a game, you're a pretty doggone talented player. And I think this is a fantastic contract for Yzerman. When you're talking about a 26-year-old, he's going to be spitting out some real solid numbers for the next 4 or 5 years. I think Yzerman with a brilliant contract here.
Yeah, that's probably the going rate for a second-line center, isn't it? About $5 million per. So I don't think it's a deal necessarily for Tampa Bay, but I think it's a fair market value. I think it's kind of a win-win for both player and club.
Yeah, I agree with that. I have no problem with the deal for Tyler Johnson. We'll take a break. Milt Stegall, CFL, Bombers, next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Our province is packed with shining stars in the world of sports. Every week, TSN 1290 would like to showcase and reward these individuals who are making a big impact and difference in what they do. Nominate a Manitoban athlete, coach, or volunteer who is dedicated to making their sport matter. Every Friday on The Big Show, we'll showcase a Subway Sports Star of the Week and reward him or her with a $50 Subway gift card. Visit TSN1290.ca to nominate your sports star, and we could be featuring them very soon. This is The Big Show on TSN 1290, and this next segment is a presentation brought to you by Johnson Waste Management. And it is with our good friend, former Blue Bomber great, and from the CFL on TSN panel, Mr. Milt Stegall. How are you today, Milt?
I'm doing great. How about you guys?
Doing well, thank you. Regarding the Will Hill incident, take us through a player's mind on how many times you felt like doing that, and then where you have to be to actually do that to an official.
Well, I can't put myself in Mr. Hill's shoes. When I was watching it, it looked like his reaction was, get your hands off of me. Don't put your hands on me. I'm a grown man, so he grabbed him. That's my perception of what I saw. I don't know if that's correct, but I've never been at a point where I wanted to grab an official. I mean, I've said some things, you know, I don't curse or anything like that, but I've said some things that I won't say were bad, but they, you know, I've said some things to some officials, but I've personally never been at a point where I wanted to grab an official. I've barely been at a point where I wanted to grab a player. So you may be asking the wrong person when it comes to that, because I never got that heated where I wanted to grab a fish, or let alone another player. So I don't understand exactly how he got to that point.
I love you, man. I know that when you get heated, it's things along the lines of "for crying out loud" and "doggone it." Those are Milt Stego swear words.
That's pretty much it. The fudge is going on. Troy spent enough time with me. If you ever heard a curse word out of me, that means I'm about to kill somebody.
The worst I saw, the worst, and it's not even the worst, but the heated I saw you is with Mike Beauregard when you said, "You done gone and banged your head?"
Exactly.
And that was about the most animated.
And that was my alter ego, Mark Spiegel. So, life is too good for me to get angry at many things. So that's just me.
Milt, ultimately, this is a real important, I believe. Like, we live in a time, Milt, it doesn't matter much what level you're talking about or what pro sport you're talking about, where there seems to be a slippery slope here where as each year goes by, officials are becoming less and less respected. And I think that is a massive part of sport going forward at all levels, to somehow get to a higher level of respect for officials. How important is it that Randy Ambrosi comes down here and makes a statement? How strong do you feel the suspension should be?
Well, he definitely has to make a statement, but there's going to be a lot of backlash regardless of how severe or not severe the suspension is, or whatever punishment he implies, because you think about what Ken Austin did last year. He said it was a natural reaction. He didn't mean to do it, but, you know, it is what it is. And Ken Austin, I think he got, did he get a half or something, or he had to sit in the booth for a game?
That's right, yeah.
I'm sure the PA is going to look at that and then compare it to what Mr. Hill did. And this is going to be – it has to be set where he steps in and he makes the right call. And what the right call is may not exist, but there's going to be a lot of backlash regardless what goes on with the suspension, with the fine. This is a great way to start the job as the new commissioner of the CFL, but he has to make sure that he does the right thing for everyone involved, which may be impossible. You can't sit on the fence. You have to be black or white. So this is going to be a very important suspension, whatever you may call it, in his term as a commissioner.
Milt, you're a former member of the PA. Take us through the process when something happens like this, and how long till we hear what the discipline will be.
Well, I'm thinking it may come the next week or two. I think he'll definitely plan this upcoming game, and then after that we'll hear something, and then the PA, they'll appeal it. And, you know, the process, we may not get the final what's going to happen for another maybe 4 or 5 weeks, because the process may take that long. So it's unfortunate it takes that long. I think you should be able to step in right away, make a decision. The appeal happens, whatever happens. It shouldn't take that long, because everyone has the evidence. Everything is right there. But unfortunately, it's going to be another maybe month or so before we finally hear or say what's going to happen.
Milt, listen to these numbers, man. There is not a team in the CFL averaging 100 yards rushing per game. Winnipeg is seventh in the league with 72 yards per game. And then Toronto, eighth at 40.3 yards per game. And Hamilton is a almost impossible 21.5 yards average rushing per game. How remarkable is it to you? And we saw a couple, I think it was a week ago, that 72% of the play calls in the CFL were pass plays. How remarkable is it to you how the run game is being so minimized right now in the league?
Well, it's not surprising. You just think of everything that's taken place over the last few years, you know, the changing of the pass interference calls, the changing that you now can challenge pass interference basically anywhere on the field. You know, you don't even have to be throwing the ball. So coaches realize that. They know they have a better chance of having success throwing the ball, because you just don't have to catch the ball to have success when you're throwing the ball right now. You only have two downs, so they understand that. So it's not surprising to me at all that teams are really going away from it. Ken Austin has never been a guy who's ran the ball. You know, C.J. Gable has always been unhappy in Hamilton. That's just how it is for Hamilton. But that's what we're trending towards, because you have more success passing the ball because you have more options. Like I said, you don't even have to catch the ball to have success, because you have so many other avenues you can go through to have success passing ball. It's unfortunate that a lot of teams are going away from running the ball, but that's just the way things are going right now.
CFL and TSN analyst Milt Stegall joining us this morning on the Big Show, TSN 1290, 11 minutes past the hour. Milt, what did you take away from the Bombers in their 29-10 loss to the Stamps on Friday?
It was a perfect storm. I mean, everything was set in place. Everything was set up for them to have success in that game. You know, it's the home opener. It's a great crowd. And I know Bo Levi Mitchell has had success, but they had some injuries along that defense. And Bombers didn't take advantage of their opportunities in that first half. They had a chance to put their throat on the Calgary Stampeders, and it didn't happen. And you see what happened in the second half. So, you know, I mean, what can you do about it? It's in the past. They have to find a way to move on. But that's a mental hurdle for them now, playing against the Calgary Stampeders. It's a mental hurdle. They understand that is the best team, not only in the West, but in the CFL, and they can't get over that hurdle. You see what happened last year in Calgary. You know, 20 seconds left in the game, Bo Levi Mitchell was able to drive them down for that field goal, and just what happened this past weekend. So they have to find a way to put that behind them, because it's not going to help them going towards the future. But that's a mental hurdle they have to find a way to get over if they want to be able to compete and eventually win a Grey Cup.
Milt, the Hamilton Tiger Cats are averaging 208 yards on net offense and are allowing 489 defensively so far this season. It just seems like this remarkable mess for Ken Austin, where a lot of people thought the Ticats had a great chance to win the East. What's your take on the situation in Hamilton?
Well, it's bad. It's really bad. You know, they've had some injuries on defense. Their strength of their defense is going to be their halfbacks, and their two starting halfbacks haven't played it down. Emmanuel Davis is on the sixth game, and their big offseason signing, Abdul Kinney from Ottawa, hadn't played it down. So they're definitely missing those guys. Offensively, they have no go-to receivers. You know, Andy Fantuzzi is not there. Terrence Tolliver was going to be their guy. He's maybe gone for the year. They have no go-to receiver, and their offensive line stinks. So everything is coming back to bite Ken Austin. You know, this is, I think it's his fifth or sixth year, so everyone was thinking, well, he's going to make it happen this year. You know, he's truly have all his guys in there. He's made all the decisions. He makes all the football decisions. This is going to work for them. I thought they were going to be the team in the East this year. I thought Zach was going to be healthy this entire year, play 18 games. He was going to tear up the league. But right now, it's not looking good for them. But, you know, you never know. The 2 years they've gone to the Grey Cup, I think they started 1-4 and 1-6. Of course, those teams were a lot better than the players they have on the field right now. But I'm sure he'll make some changes, and we'll have to wait and see what happens. But the guys they have on the field right now, they can't get it done with those guys. They won't win five games with the players they have on the field right now, because let's be honest, those guys are horrible.
Wow. The surprise of the East negatively is the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Positively has to be the Toronto Argonauts. They come into Investors Group Field on Thursday with a 2-1 record. What have you seen from the Argos that has surprised you the most this year?
It's not Ricky Ray. It's not S.J. Green. It's that defense. They have some dogs on that defense, specifically that defensive line. Their linebackers, Barrett Woods, is a top-notch guy, ball, pretty good DBs. You know, they're solid, but that defensive line, they're a beast. Eliminator, he's having a good year, but it's that guy on the other end, the Butler. Seven sacks, and then they get some help from Lang and Bishop and Finley. Those guys are putting pressure on the quarterback like no other. And when you can do that with your four, and you can drop back eight, and some just rush three and rush nine as a quarterback, as offensive coordinator, you can't devise a game plan against that. It's very difficult when a team is able to drop back eight and nine guys and you're trying to get second and eight, second and nine, second and ten. It's impossible to do that. So Corey Chamberlain is doing a great job. He's an aggressive defense. He plays a cat defense. Basically, his thing is, I cover this cat, you cover that cat, we cover this cat. That's the type of defense he plays, and he can do that because they have the defensive front to do that. So it's going to be very difficult for those Bombers if they can't block that front four of the Toronto Argonauts.
Right before we let you go, Milt, back to the Will Hill thing. What do you think he gets? What discipline do you think he'll get?
I'm thinking two games. I'm thinking two games. The PA will appeal it, and it may come down to one game. So a lot of people will be very displeased with that. But I think at the end of the day, they'll start off with two, they'll appeal it, and he'll get down to one. That's what I'm thinking.
Milt, I want to give you a plug. You got a Milt Stegall Celebrity Golf Classic coming up. It's being presented by Pony Corral. It's August 30th at the Kingswood Golf and Country Club. Also on August 29th, a patio party at Pony Corral on Pembina Highway with a CFL player auction going on. A hot stove's going to happen, being hosted by our one and only Chris Walby. For those interested in registering for the tournament, they go to www.premierseventscelebs.com. That sounds like a bunch of fun, Milt.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. I'm not a golfer, but I'm an entertainer, so I'll go out there and make some laughs. But as far as golfing, I think I've golfed 10 times in my entire life. But we'll go out there and have a good time and raise some money for a worthy cause. So I'm definitely looking forward to it.
Milt, good luck with that, and thanks as always for your time. Great stuff. Enjoy the rest of your day and your week.
Oh, thanks a lot. I'm about to go get me a workout in because I may try to sign with the Hamilton Tiger Cats. You never know.
Nice, brother. Oh, no. Come back home, baby. Come back home. Take care, brother.
All right. Take care. Yep.
Blasphemy heard around the radio here.
Turtle Man, right, you got to wear a blue and gold jersey, man. Come on.
I always like asking Milt, would you ever come back? And he said, I always could.
You
could
for four quarters.
But I will not.
A bunch of the old boys could get it going for four quarters, no question at all. It's waking up the next morning and needing a week or two to recover.
You know, that's interesting. His views there, and probably bang on. Knows way more about it than I do. But that two games into the season for the Hamilton Tiger Cats, and they need to make massive changes. They're not good enough, Milton.
Which is shocking. It's absolutely the differential. You just don't hear a net yard differential of damn near 280 yards. Like, they're O and D. That's the difference, the net difference. So it's just with a healthy Zach Kolaros, right? Like, nobody saw this. It's remarkable. It's absolute train wreck. And you wonder, can Kent Austin survive it, ultimately?
5 years there at the helm, and it'll be interesting. I don't know. I know for one thing, I've been playing TSN Fantasy Football, CFL, and Zach Kolaros has done me no favors.
How funny is Milt with the swearing, too? Like, the height of his anger is, what the fudge is going on here? He is something.
Honestly, the most angry I've seen him is with him and the Beauregard exchange, where Beauregard laughs
that
about all the time.
That was a bad
now.
Exchange for Milt, right? Because Beauregard said, well, junior hockey, and Milt has no clue what level junior hockey is, and then that was
but
funny.
Watching that on videotape, I was like, and I actually talked to Bo about that, I'm like, don't say it, don't say it. Don't say it, don't tell him. He's like, junior hockey, and he's like, oh!
I remember
and
watching
Armstrong
that
sitting there watching the back and forth. Oh, yeah. Great.
Did the locker room ever laugh when Milt got heated? And you know how, like, sometimes you laugh when someone gets really upset, but they use, like, funny words instead of curse words?
Yeah, no, I don't think anybody ever. And there was less than a handful of times where Milt got really angry in the locker room. But nobody ever really laughed about it, man. But like, when he's being funny with his humor, lots of laughter, and his dance-offs and stuff like that. But when Milt was angry, it was more everyone just kind of quiet, looked down to the ground, and let it pass.
I always find awkwardness funny. And when Ace Burpee, and I was at Shaw, was on with Kim Babich on the Fabulous Blue Bomber show, and he took a banjo into the dressing room, and he picked it up, and he started playing it. But it was like he'd just stare at the camera, and he'd, like, make his own words. He'd go, twang, 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 twang. And a long pause, and twang, 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 twang. And just went on and on and on. Uh-huh. And Ace Burpee standing there, clapping along and then stopping. It was hilarious awkwardness. That was brilliant. Milt Stegall in the locker room. You gone and banged your head. That's the most aggressive language I've heard him say. This was a presentation of Johnson Waste Management, a Winnipeg-run family business doing their best to be the very best. We'll be back on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Pick up your official TSN 1290 discount golf card today. Hit the greens throughout the summer with great 2-for-1 deals at a multitude of Manitoba golf courses, including Granite Hills Golf Club, Selkirk Golf and Country Club, Scottswood Links Golf Course, the Winkler Centennial Golf Course, La Verande Golf Course, Bell Acres Golf and Country Club, and the Steinbeck Fly-In Golf Club, just to name a few. Book a tee time and show your card for great rates. Cards are only $34.95 each. Some restrictions apply. To purchase your card for a complete list of participating courses, visit TSN1290.ca. And hey, I forgot to mention last segment, so I'll do it right now. We have a pair of tickets to the Bombers-Argos battle at Investors Group Field. Thursday night, Manuk Dencher Blue Bomber Game Day. Full coverage as you head to the game if you should win these tickets. 12 caller through 780-1290. 780-1290. We have a pair of tickets to the Bombers and Argos Thursday night at Investors Group Field.
Feel nervous about this one, man.
Yeah, it's interesting, eh? Like, even Caroline Hunter here at the station, our affiliate station, Bob FM, and I were talking yesterday. She goes, what did you think of the game? And I said, well, we just spent all morning talking about the Stamps game. And I said, it left me without – I thought I'd know more about this Bomber team, and I really don't. Like, what I expected from the defense was better. What I expected from the offense was worse. I don't know how it played out, but this Thursday will be telling. And she said the third game in 14 days for the Bombers, it'll be really telling what they can do against a 2-1 Argos team. I thought that was a great point. It's a lot of football. They had the bye week, but then third game in 14 days is a lot of football.
That's a fair point to make. And then, like, a season can go off the rails in a hurry, right? A couple weeks and things can – be heightened and everyone excited, and then the other thing can happen if you drop a couple, and boy oh boy, what a different feeling early on in the season it'll be if there's enough struggle on Thursday to suffer a loss here. That a massive game already early in the year.
So we have a pair of tickets once again, 12th caller through 780-1290. We'll get those tickets. Do we have a winner already?
Oh yeah.
Oh, who's our lucky winner?
Yeah, selling like hotcakes. It's Chris Scoverl.
Chris, congratulations, and thanks for listening to TSN 1290. You're off to the Bombers and Argos Thursday night. I want to talk about, we'll get your thoughts again on the Tanev signing, and we'll open the Boss Pizza fan line at 9 on that as well. But quickly, what do you think Will Hill gets now that it's been a day and sort of discussed? And is it going to be two games, Milt says? I think it should be more, and I always know that we talk about suspensions in pro leagues, and we always feel it should be more, but two games for – you didn't bump an official. You aggressively grabbed him. I think it should be more than two.
Yeah, there's no doubt whatsoever that it should be more, but it sure wouldn't surprise me if it was less. And it's – I wonder how long Randy Ambrosio and the CFL are going to take to make this decision here. At what point in time are we going to hear about this? I'm looking down at the poll that we sent out, and with about 1,500 votes, is 73% say 4 to 6 games or 6 or more games. And I think idealistically, that's what you want to see. That's what you want to see handed down. But like, to me, for making an aggressive gesture or action towards a referee, two games is a farce. It's just an absolute farce. It'll sting because you lose your check from that, and of course you hurt the team. But you have to make, to me, that's truly a sacred relationship that the official has to have on the field of play, the ice, the court, wherever, whatever sport we're talking about. And you know, to me, a 4 to 6 game suspension would be reasonable. I don't even. That's not Old Testament type justice coming down. A 2-game suspension, I'd be really saddened for that, but I would understand that's you see Mickey Mouse suspensions like this with the leagues that are too afraid to take on the PA too strong, and God help if the PA doesn't like the two games and Will Hill wants to fight it, and then that gets whittled down to a game. That's an absolute joke at this point in time. So I wouldn't be surprised if it was two, but I'll be real disappointed that the league didn't battle harder for the safety and well-being and just the relationship involved with the officials.
I think 4 is a fair number for me. You know, it's basically a quarter of the season.
Yeah.
It's harsh without being overly harsh, kind of. Like, I just feel like it's a fair punishment. And you know, it kind of sets a baseline moving forward, right? You put your hands on the official, 4 games. Any increased physical contact after that point, we're going up and up and up.
That's what I would like to see, Wick. Similar to how the NHL has a minimum in place for contact on a referee, similar should exist with the CFL. And at this point in time, I don't believe that it does.
We'll continue the football talk next with Jason Cole, the Bleacher Report on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
T
TSN 1290, proud to be a media sponsor of the upcoming 2017 Canada Summer Games in our city, July 28th to August 13th. 16 sports, over 250 events. The 50th anniversary of the Canada Summer Games will welcome 20,000 visitors. Of course, you can help paint the town red, yellow, and orange every Friday until July 21st. Wear your official 2017 Canada Summer Games clothing. Take a picture of yourself and share the photo using the handle at 2017 Canada Games and hashtag gear up for a chance to win a Via Rail promotional travel credit. Visit canadagames.ca/2017 for more information about Game Gear Fridays. You can also check out the lineups for the opening and closing ceremonies July 28th and August 13th, and also get your tickets for those at ticketmaster.ca and take in the Manitoba Liquor and Lotteries Canada Games Festival at the Forks from July 29th to the 12th. Lots of local artists, bands, lots going on throughout the 11 days and over 150 artists. Visit canadagames.ca/2017 for the full festival lineup as well. The Big Show, Jim Tolt, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki, going to open the Boston Pizza fan line at 9 o'clock. Lots to talk about. Bombers Argos on Thursday. And, of course, Brandon Tanev gets a contract. The Home Run Derby last night, All-Star Game tonight. And we were discussing the potential extension for Kevin Cheveldayoff. We'll do that at 9 o'clock on the Boston Pizza fan line. Right now we're going to talk some NFL, and we like to do that with our good friend from thebleacherreport.com, Mr. Jason Cole. Jason, how are you today?
I'm great. What's going on?
Not too much. Always a busy off season going forward, of course. And I read an interesting article, I think it was yesterday or the day before, about 9 active quarterbacks in the NFL are all probably going to the Hall of Fame. Has the league ever had that before, where one position had that many Hall of Famers actively playing?
Well, they're saying 9 quarterbacks?
9, yeah.
I mean, I could count probably 5 or 6 off the top of my head, and I'm a Hall of Fame voter. So
yeah, no, that's why I was asking.
I think you'd have to go back in time. That no, because I look at the '70s, and that was Ken Stabler. Ken Stabler was like on the All-Decade team, and Ken Stabler didn't even make it until the, you know, sort of the old-timers process. So. You know, I would say that there's never been a time where you've had 9 at once. I don't know that 9 are going to go from this era. I'd have to go through that article pretty well to sort of sort it out. Maybe they're being a little bit premature on a couple of guys, but that's okay. I mean, it's still, even if you have 6, 5 or 6 or even 7 of them, that's a lot for any era.
Yeah,
any time. And highlights that the NFL has become a true sort of quarterback era. Or quarterback-centric more than at any time before.
Yeah, I think they're premature on Cam Newton and Russell Wilson. I should have named them for you anyways. But Cam Newton,
yeah,
Russell
Wilson.
Yeah,
they're way premature. Because there was a time when I thought, you know, Donovan McNabb, when he was still in Philadelphia, that Donovan McNabb was on a path to the Hall of Fame. And then he just fizzled really fast. And that happens with a lot of players at a lot of positions. But it also happens especially at quarterback, where you see a guy put up a tremendous amount of stats for, say, the first 7 or 8 years, and then all of a sudden it just falls off a cliff. And that's what happened with Donovan McNabb. Really good player, may get some consideration and some discussion for Hall of Fame, but is never. I don't think he's ever going to make the Hall of Fame.
Jason, there's been a whole bunch of noise from football people, NFL people, about the amount of money right now that NBA players are starting to reel in, and some people are comparing it to the NFL and revenue sharing and all that sort of stuff that's going on upcoming here with CBA and the possibility to get more piece of the pie and players paid more. What's your take on all that noise going on?
Well, I think that there are some things that, you know, that are fair to compare, but Here's the one biggest problem you have. It's a game with 12, you know, with 12 guys on a team versus, you know, 53. Then you add in the practice squad guys and all the other things. So, look, I think there's some improvements that can be done to the way that players get paid in the NFL, and I would advocate that. But people need to realize that the NFL players actually get a higher percentage of the gross than NBA players get. The point is that there's an incredible concentration of very few players getting the money in the NBA. And so when you only have to share among 12 guys, it changes the math completely. So that if there's only 12 guys on a football roster that have to get it, the quarterback is probably getting four times as much money. So Derek Carr, would his contract in NBA terms would be $100 million a year if you only had to share among 12 guys, basically. And, you know, whereas, they're trying to compare that to the fact that Steph Curry's getting $40 million a year and look how much more he's getting. And then let's go on down. All these guys who are making $30 million a year who are not even really great players. Like, there's a lot of guys that nobody even knows who they are, and they're making $30 million a year in the NBA. But, if you did that with guys making $10 million a year in the NFL, they'd be making 40 because it's just the simple math that goes with the game.
It's going to be very interesting. Do you think there'll be a – we do this with a lot of sports – a work stoppage on the forefront for the NFL?
We're 4 years away from that, number one. Number two, people started saying, oh, the NFL players need to go out on strike. Those are people who don't understand any history of NFL players going on strike. When NFL players have gone on strike, and they've done it five times, okay, in the past, I think, 55 or 60 years, and I know this stuff because I study it pretty closely. They've gone on strike five times. All five of those strikes failed. They got nothing out of those strikes because it's just too hard to keep the players together. I mean, classically, in 1987, you had guys crossing the picket lines left and right. Their strike fell apart. It dissolved in moments, right? Here's the other thing. In 2011, they weren't even on strike. They were locked out. Okay, they couldn't even walk in the doors. And they couldn't stay together then to wait it out for the best deal. When the owners were the ones who locked the doors, they couldn't keep it together. And that's how weak the NFL Players Union is. And not necessarily, I'm not trying to blame this on leadership altogether. It's the fact that you have, basically 1,600 guys versus in baseball you have less than half that many. And in basketball, again, you have a quarter that many. I mean, in basketball you've got, 400 players in the entire union? It's a lot easier to keep 400 guys together than it is to keep 1,600 guys together. And then here's the last point that people need to understand. NFL players are far more replaceable. Quarterbacks, not necessarily. I get that. But offensive linemen and cornerbacks and running backs, you can find those guys. They get replaced all the time. In baseball, it's hard to find guys who can hit a curveball. In basketball, there are only so many human beings who are that tall and that fast. Okay, so it's a much more specialized kind of situation where strikes can be more effective in baseball and they can be more effective in basketball. Not that they have, but they can be, because keeping together football players is much, much harder because their ability to make money and the amount of time that they have to make money is much shorter.
Jason, how do you see the quarterback situation in Denver playing out?
Well, I mean, look, they drafted Paxton Lynch in the first round for a reason. They think he's got special talent. And you talk to John Elway, he thinks that, they traded up to get this kid. They knew that Dallas, or they had a feeling that Dallas was going to take him. So they jumped Dallas to go get a guy. And so I think that if all things are equal, Paxton Lynch is going to get every opportunity to play, especially with a new coaching staff. This is not Gary Kubiak who sat there and, saw Trevor Siemian for a couple of years and saw him develop and said, okay, I want a guy who's not going to make mistakes. I think you're going to have a coaching staff that's going to sit there and say, I want to play much more on, hey, we got a guy with some big potential and we got to get him out there on the field. So if it's close, I think it's Paxton Lynch. Now, if Paxton Lynch doesn't perform very well or doesn't continue to progress the way that people have talked about him progressing so far, then, I see Trevor Siemian winning it by default. But I think that this is a race that Paxton Lynch is in the driver's seat, but has the greatest control of.
How effective do you think Marshawn Lynch will be in the Raiders' offensive scheme this year?
Look, my gut level tells me that he's a tough guy and wants to prove it, and he's playing at home and he's under some pressure, right? And so I think that he's going to have a good year. I think that things are going to work out for Marshawn Lynch, And so I would bet a small amount of money on him having a good year. You know, is that 1,200 yards and a dozen touchdowns? Okay, I'm in for that. Okay. Is he gonna have a great year? I doubt it, because being away from the game for an entire year is tough. And would I bet that he's more likely to flop than he is to be great? Yes, I would bet much more on him flopping, because I think that being away from the game for a year, it's like, you know, Mondays are really nice when you don't get hit on Sunday. You know, and to go back to that lifestyle and to do it all over again and to do it the way he did it, and play as vicious and as physical as he did, that's a tough call for me to make, that he's gonna come back and play to that kind of level. So I'm very suspicious of this, but because of the because he's going back to Oakland, because the offensive line is so good, because he, you know, I think he's committed to this. I think it's more likely he's going to be good. I just wouldn't bet on great.
Jason Cole, the Bleacher Report, joining us this morning on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
Jason, Todd Marinovich had a cup of coffee up in Winnipeg in the CFL during one of our training camps, and things didn't work out for him. And I think he was still mired in a bunch of his struggle, but he's 48 years old now, says he's sober, and looks like he's trying to make a comeback in a developmental league here with the SoCal Coyotes. Your thoughts on the journey and struggle of Todd Marinovich?
Todd Marinovich is the poster child for, and it's really not Todd, it's Marv, his dad. Marv Marinovich is the poster child for how you can't create a quarterback from a physical standpoint. You have to create him from a mental standpoint. I think Marv Marinovich was all into, I can train a guy, I can make him, I can control his diet, control his exercise, control everything he does, and I'll make a quarterback. It's like, no, Marv, you have to train him on how to be a good person in a locker room and how to be a leader, and let the coaches and let him decide whether he wants to do all the physical things that are required to be a quarterback. I mean, you can teach him the basic, like how you throw a football and this is how you line up, but the value of what parents do for their quarterbacks is teach them principles and how to interact with other human beings. And Marv Marinovich missed that 100%. And it's a sad case, because Todd, I think there was passion inside of Todd Marinovich. It just wasn't channeled very well because his dad screwed it all up. And so I look back at Todd as a sort of sad, creature that his dad screwed up very badly, but I'm really happy for him that he's out there playing ball at 48 years old and making a go of it and seeing what he can do, because he was really a good athlete when he was out on the field. He had some really, intriguing talent. Unfortunately, the bust stories, like this is a great story that Tom Kahn and his agent tells about going in to meet with Al Davis. And this is after Todd was going through all of his struggles with heroin and addiction and all this other stuff. And Al Davis looked at Tom Condon and said, "How's that house I bought?" And he was referring to the house that Todd bought in Laguna Hills, down in Southern California. And Condon goes, "Coach, I don't know what to say to you. And then all of a sudden, Al Davis just gets angrier and angrier and angrier about the fact that Todd Marinovich wasted his talent.
Interesting. Before we let you go, get your thoughts on the new Chiefs GM. Is it Brett Veach?
Veach, yeah. He knows all the players in the organization, obviously, because he's been there. He knows the owner, who was disappointed in dealing with John Dorsey. He knows Coach Andy Reid for 20-something years, I think it is. They go a long way back, or maybe not 20, but at least 12 years. He knows Andy Reid. So he knows the lay of the land there. So this was a pretty obvious hire for them, especially given the time of the year that all of this happened. I'll just say this. I know John Dorsey, has his detractors in that building, and Clark Hunt is number one among them, because John was not necessarily the most organized guy in the world. But John Dorsey was a hell of a decision maker when it came to going and finding talent. And that roster is great, in large part because of John Dorsey and the things that he did to help make it great. So Veach has some serious shoes to fill in terms of selecting talent and maintaining that team and maintaining the direction that John Dorsey built. That's as much as I can tell you about that situation.
Jason, we appreciate your time as always. Great stuff, and enjoy your day.
Anytime, guys. Be good. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Jason.
And a reminder, you can stream us on the iHeartRadio app and all your favorite devices. Get a customized playlist to suit your mood or activity. Your music, your station's always free. Download the iHeartRadio app today and stream on.
You know, pal, when I first showed up on the scene here in Winnipeg, and we used to run the odd fake at a rollout left, I was actually mistaken a couple times by the great Cal Murphy
for Todd
for Kenny Stabler.
Oh, Kenny Stabler.
Yeah, even had the snake. He was calling me the snake for a few weeks and all the rest of it. I could never unleash the weapon. You know, we never did run a fake when I was throwing. They always let freaking Cameron throw for whatever reason. The Katie Axman and his
Creighton
Award winner, all that crap.
Award as a quarterback.
But the snake was never unleashed on the CFL field over here, boys.
No goes to the post. That's too bad.
Had the hair flow, the lefty thing going. Woo-hoo-hoo. That sucker just.
What a waste of talent.
Yeah. Damn shame.
I saw the flea flicker on Friday's game. Love the flea flicker.
Yeah.
Paula Police swears to me every year that it's in the book.
Nice. Like, you got to have the flea flicker in that
book. As long
as
it's
right?
in the book, coach.
That's right, yeah.
It didn't work out, but as long as it's in the book. The old snake, eh?
Yeah.
New handle for Westwood here on the show.
Still got a little bit. Anything 15, 20 yards could still zip it in pretty good, boys.
We'll tee up the Boss Pizza fan line next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Jim Choth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki, and the Boss Pizza fan line wide open, 780-1290 in merely 4 minutes time. Will be quick. Home Run Derby, did you like it?
I really enjoyed it. I thought the commentary was the best that I can ever recall. And my goodness, was the Sanchez-Stanton matchup ever spectacular. It was just unbelievable. Had a bunch of fun. Aaron Judge is so likable. And I asked this morning how fortunate the New York Yankees are when you talk about a face of a team to go to have the baton passed from Derek Jeter to presumably here, if it's not already done, to Aaron Judge. Is what a fortunate occurrence for that franchise.
Yeah. Too bad for a franchise that's been down in its luck for so many years. I mean, for me, it was the Boers Judge first rounder, where this guy comes out of nowhere. It's just
fair.
This kind of pudgy, donut-eating first baseman just blasted shots into the right field bleachers.
22 up? Is that what he
20,
put?
Yeah, 22. Oh, yeah, 22. Yeah. And then Judge matches that in his regulation time, that he has 30 more seconds because he hit a bunch of 440-plus foot ball. Like, it was... I was surprised by how much fun it was and entertaining it was. Definitely, I would say probably the most entertaining all-star, I guess, activity or festivity out of all the four sports I've seen in
recent
a number of
for
years.
Sure, yeah, I agree.
I agree. I think it's a gimmick for fans and everything, but I thought it worked last night for the first time in a long time. I thought it really gripped round by round. What did you think of the Home Run Derby? And who do you have in tonight's All-Star game, American League or National League? The home field advantage in the World Series is no longer on the line. Brandon Tanev gets a haircut of $134K, signs a one-year, one-way deal worth $700,000 with the Jets. Your thoughts on the deal?
Just a super deep move here, right, for the Jets. You wonder how many or if he'll make it up with the big club. If he does get a chance, we'd sure love to see some level of offensive production from him, but great for Brendan Tanev.
I think it's a depth signing, no more, no less.
Yeah, I'd agree. Hey, just probably realistically just a good player for the Moose this year.
And the Bombers look to be without Ian Wild. Not only this week, Kyle Knox repping at the weak side linebacker in place of Wild. Your thoughts on the Bombers and the Argos going forward? Of course, men's volleyball gets a bronze in the World League, first medal there. And Tyler Johnson's contract, 7-year, $35 million, $5 million per. Is that something Brian Little would like? Do you think it would cost more than that? Anything and everything coming up on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290 on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
He's here, everybody.
It's his
Michael
world.
Michael Ramos
huh?
is here. His world, we're just living in it.
You're going to walk into this room, but you're going to limp out, sucker.
Did he tell me to stand up straight or sit up straight?
Posture, JT. Posture, man.
It's all about confidence, eh? Just walks in, sits up straight,
so.
Tope.
Yeah.
Walks out, and like, oh, I actually sat up straight. All right. This is the Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Boss Pete's fan line, 780-1290. You can text us at 1290-90. With standard message rates applying. Lots to talk about today with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki, and this just coming out. The Pittsburgh Penguins have signed Kevin Churchman to a one-year, two-way contract. Churchman, 26, spent last season, of course, with the Manitoba Moose and was also their alternate captain. He set career highs with 9 goals, 23 assists, 32 points in 76 games. So Churchman signs with the Pittsburgh Penguins organization, 1 year, two-way deal. Won't be back with the Manitoba Moose next year, 26 years old.
Good luck to the young fella. A lot of people were talking fairly highly about his game.
Brandon Tanev gets a one-year deal with a bit of a pay cut, $700K. It's a one-way contract as well. Your thoughts on that? The home run derby. Aaron Judge, how enthralled with you with this young man, this rookie in the All-Star game tonight? Who do you like? The Blue Bombers host the Argos. No Ian Wild. Potential other injury on the defensive line. We'll know more after today's practice. Your thoughts on that? Tyler Johnson gets a 7-year, $35 million deal. Does that look like a Brian Little contract to you? Get your impressions of that. And we talked about Kevin Cheveldayoff. Is it time to extend him? Will he get an extension? And if so, for how long? And your thoughts on that as well. Anything and everything today on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Doug, you're kicking us off today on the program. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Good, thanks.
I was watching the home run derby yesterday, and I was pretty excited. I was hoping for Stanton, to be honest with you. I thought it would have been a great final to have Judge and Stanton in the final. But I might have had some comeback, because I was reading the paper this morning. Did you guys see the Free Press there with the story on Judge?
I did not read that story yet.
Well, it's on page 4 or 5 of the sports, and it's got a picture of Judge hitting a home run, a big headline, and some writing behind below it. To be honest with you guys, I think that picture is Stanton. I think they got my boy.
Oh, really?
That's what I think. I'd like you guys to check it out, because it sure looks like Stanton to me.
We'll check it out.
Check it out, because, you know, if it is Stanton, you guys have got a new advertising campaign going. Have everybody reading, listening to your story every morning and telling them that you never know what breaking news you get from us.
Well played.
There you go, guys.
Well played. Who do you have in the All-Star game tonight, the American League or the National League?
Well, I like the American. They're just too powerful.
Fair enough. We appreciate the call, Doug.
You got it. Rick, check that out for me.
Yeah, online, Doug. Online, they've got the proper picture. It is definitely Judge.
It is, eh?
Yeah, but they could be different from the paper version, you know?
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, check out. I'm still kind of curious to know if that really is Judge, because it sure looks like Stanton to me.
Last night, Trey thought Stanton looked like The Rock. He thought that was The Rock.
Actually, that's great. Yeah, it does look like The Rock.
It truly does, yeah.
Miami as well. Miami. Thanks for the call, Doug. We appreciate it. Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Ralph, you're on the program.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Ralph, how have you been?
Well, I've been okay where I'm at in life. I just wanted to mention one of the things that when I was going to high school, I used to go to Osborne Stadium, you know, where Great West Life is?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's where Osborne Stadium, that's where they play football. And I was waiting outside to get into one of the games, and one of the guys grabbed a hold of me. He said, "Want to go into the game, kid?" And I said, "Yeah." Guess who was quarterback? Indian Jack Jacobs.
Just Jack Jacobs, yeah.
And he was from Green Bay, Wisconsin.
He was a beauty, wasn't he? Revolutionized the game.
Yeah, nobody could catch his balls, because Matt Dunnigan was supposed to have a real zizzler, but Indian Jack, nobody could catch him, but they brought in a guy by the name of Joe Aguirre, and he started catching them, and Bud Grant, he came in. And so But I just thought to let you guys know that there's still guys around that saw Jack Jacobs.
Thanks, Ralph. We appreciate it. And you know, he's the first pro quarterback, either in Canada or the States, to throw for 3,000 yards and 30 TDs, and he did it in 1951.
Truly an awesome athlete, yeah.
We'll be in the Ring of Honor at Thursday's game. Another reason if you want to go down to the Investors Group field and take that in. Breaking news here, Brandon Rewicki, you had the suspension for Will Hill.
CFL announced it has imposed a discipline of one-game suspension for Will Hill for grabbing the jersey of an official.
Atrocious.
Yeah, that's an absolute atrocity.
And if the officials don't take up this plight, I'll be disappointed in them. This is to put your hands on an official in any league has to garner you more than one game, in my opinion.
Oh, that's just doggone it. That really, really bothers me, man.
How do you protect your refs now?
Yeah. Come on, man.
So this is an organization, and 2 years in a row has come in contact with an official. This last time, aggressively grabbing him by the collar, and you get a one-game suspension for that. That's what you get now for touching an official in the Canadian Football League.
Yep.
I'll need this one explained to me, but it is breaking news right now. We'll get your opinions on that as well on the Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Will Hill, the Hamilton Tiger Cats, got a one-game suspension from the Canadian Football League for grabbing an official in Sunday's game in Saskatchewan. We appreciate the call, Ralph. It's been a while. Good to hear from you. Back to the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Martin, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead.
Martin just left, but his question, and if anybody else had a question similar to this, was he wanted to know when Military Appreciation Night was for the Jets this year. They're announcing their promo nights in August sometime.
Cool. So. Okay.
We don't know yet.
Love those camo jerseys, man.
Yeah, it's always great.
Love them.
More and more teams are doing this,
they
too.
Are
but the Jets
sharp.
Do, and they started back when the Moose were the only team in town appreciating the military.
Should wear them for the
there.
Whole game, though. They are sharp, man.
The camo?
Yeah, I love them.
I don't know. I don't know how that. I've never seen it on TV, actually. If it,
I don't know why they don't.
Then you know camo's working.
Weak sauce.
That's fired today,
it's
man.
It's not that bad.
Some of the camo jerseys don't look like MLB when they wear them. Some of them don't look all that sharp. I think the Jets camo jerseys are gorgeous.
Can't wear the camo jerseys on TV because you can't see the players, is what Brandon Rewicki is telling us.
Yeah, it's not even funny because it's on ice. It doesn't work at all.
I'm taking the dub. I'm taking the dub there.
Camel's working. It works. Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290, if you want to weigh in on the conversation. Lots to get to regarding your thoughts on the Brandon Tanev contract, the Home Run Derby, the All-Star Game tonight. Bombers and Argos, who are you sort of leaning towards? We're going to continue to tee this game up and have full coverage pregame on the Minuk Dencher Blue Bomber Game Day Thursday with Darren Bombing, Troy Westwood, and Chris Walby. But which way are you leaning towards in this game? And, of course, a possible extension for Kevin Cheveldayoff. Would you extend him? If so, how long? And if you do think one is coming, where do you think that's going? But the breaking news as well, Will Hill, the linebacker for the Hamilton Tiger Cats, grabbed an official by the collar in Sunday's game and got ejected for it against the Saskatchewan Rough Riders in Regina and just came out under new commissioner Randy Ambrosi, who started yesterday, got a one-game suspension. Is that enough? What are your thoughts on that? You can text us 129090 with standard message rates applying and give us a call at 780-1290. Who's next on the Boss Pizza fan line?
Ron.
Ron, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Hey, guys.
Hi, Ron.
How you doing?
Good, thank you.
Excellent. Okay, so yesterday, Paul Edmonds and Hustler were going back and forth on the Connor Hellebuyck filing for arbitration. And what I get out of, or what I'm thinking of what's coming out of this, or what I'm thinking, what maybe Connor's thinking, is that he's probably not liking the offer that the Jets are offering him. And do you guys think that maybe he might be a little miffed that they went out and got a goalie? Or do you think he has the right to be upset that they went out and got a goalie that probably will be the starter in the season? Or is this just something that he has a right to go through and he's using all the assets that he's got available to him?
The latter, for sure, in my opinion. He has zero right to be upset that they brought somebody in. That's pro sports, big fella, and if he can't handle it, he's in the wrong job. But we see like players all the time do this, right? I think 28 players this year, similar last year. You see one or two guys only per season that end up actually going to an arbitrator. Expect this with Hellebuck and the Jets to be solved and done prior to it going to an arbitrator.
Well, the way I was listening to Paul Edmonds talk, he doesn't think that. He thinks it's going to an arbitrator, but Hustler's thinking the your way, and I'm thinking the same way, is that they're going to have it resolved before they do get to an arbitrator. So it was just my thoughts. I just wanted to know what you guys were thinking. So thanks for taking my call. Take care.
Take care, man.
Thanks, Ron. It is interesting because I don't think Steve Mason weighs into this argument for Connor Hellebuck or the Jets at all. What they're going to argue in arbitration is, I was your starting goaltender. This was your team's defensive play. This is where your penalty kill was. This is what I deserve. And from the Jets' standpoint, they're going to sit there and go, well, these were your numbers. These are, you know, things that blah, 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 all this back and forth. So, I mean, arbitration isn't pretty. It never is. It's literally, from what players have told me, you sit in a room and you watch video of yourself and how awful you've been. It's a highlight reel of how bad you played. And the team argues that this is why we feel you're only worth this. And the agent counters with, you know, your positive points. And that's why arbitration sometimes leads to, you know, hard feelings between an organization and a player. Do you guys think it gets arbitration?
No, I don't. Unless, I don't, I just don't see it. And I think you have to say no because of how few of them actually ever do. I think you have to lean towards that.
No, I don't think there's any reason for him to go to arbitration. I know Mike Hoffman was a guy that went to arbitration a few years ago, and he had a breakout season with, I think, 27 goals or something in that area. And, I mean, that's more of a reason for a guy to go to arbitration, where you think you're a couple million off or something like that. Like, Hellebuck's deal is basically confined to the $1 million range, somewhere in and around there. So is it worth it to go to arbitration for a couple of hundred thousand dollars? I just don't think it's worth it for either side, really.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's a lot of bread.
Well,
I mean, we lose perspective sometimes on money with these numbers being thrown on, but that's a lot of bread, though, man.
Like, your point is, though, it's not like one guy's asking for $6 million and the team's offering three.
Yeah, there's, like, if it's 1.5 to 1.3, yeah, I think you can bridge the difference. But if it's Hoffman's asking for five and the Sens are going to offer 2.5, well,
see, and we have to keep in mind, in Connor Hellebuck's mind, even with the signing of Steve Mason, he still thinks he's a starting goaltender. And that's how he's preparing for the season. That's where he's going. That's what his agent's telling him, too. You were the number one netminder for the Winnipeg Jets last year. You had your ups and downs, but that's the side they're representing. Where the Jets are clearly representing, you are a starting goaltender. We had our ups and downs. It didn't go well. You know, I imagine they qualified the 10%. They're willing to go maybe a mil five, and he's probably looking for, you know, the Jacob Trouba money of 2 to 3 mil per for 2 years or plus, and there's a difference there. I don't know if it goes to arbitration or not. I don't think it would, but that's because I don't think Connor Hellebuck has much of a leg to stand on, and I think and maybe it's over term. Maybe he's like, I want more term, but... Your thoughts on that and everything else we're discussing on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 after we come back from our break on TSN 1290.
There's no way it's more term. When you have a bad year or an underachieving year like that, yeah.
We'll take a break and take more of your thoughts when we come back to The Big Show.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290, Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki, and your calls on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. I just want to mention this quickly. Roy Rana is the head coach of the U19 Canada men's basketball program that just won the gold medal, the first championship for Canada basketball at any stage on the world setting. And Roy Rana just tweeted out, we mentioned this at the start of the show, the involvement of Kirby Shep, the Winnipegger and U of M Bisons basketball coach, and had a knee injury this year. So he went to training camp in Toronto for the team, has been working with this team for close to 10 years, and decided with his knee injury to just sort of step back from the actual tournament itself overseas. And Roy Rana tweeted out, "Special thanks to my friend, assistant, and world champion Kirby Shep. Together since 09 and with me all the way in 17. Sacrifice to find." Kirby Shep responded, "Humbled and honored. It's been an incredible decade of growth for the entire program and for me. All credit to my friend, Coach Rana." So I just wanted to make acknowledgement of the fine work Kirby Shep has done and was on with the warm-up with Husser yesterday. North End Rick had a comment about the Hellebuyck arbitration case.
Yeah, and the question was whether or not term was something that could be discussed or bargained with. And how it works is the side against who arbitration was filed gets to elect a term of either 1 or 2 years for the salary that's eventually awarded. So in this case, Hellebuyck filed for arbitration, which means the Jets can decide whether or not the contract is for 1 or 2 years.
There you go. And also coming out this morning, minutes ago, literally, the Canadian Football League has suspended Hamilton Tiger Cats linebacker Will Hill 1 game for grabbing that official in the Saskatchewan game in Regina on Sunday. A 1-game suspension, and they put out their reasoning for it as well.
This is the quote from Commissioner Randy Ambrosi. "It is a fundamental principle in all of sport. You cannot and must not lay your hands on an official. Just as officials are integral to the integrity of competition, respect for officials is essential to proper behavior in the arena of competition. I acknowledge that in this case, the player involved appeared to quickly realize the inappropriateness of his actions and release the official. But that does not erase the fact that the player crossed a line that should never be crossed in sport at any level, and which certainly should be respected in an elite professional league such as the Canadian Football League. Furthermore, by punching an opponent, this player has not only displayed the opposite of sportsmanship, he has undermined the commitment to player health and safety that must be shared by the league and its players alike. Just as player safety is critical to our game, so too is the safety of our officials. I'm committed to developing a policy in the very, very near term to improve and codify the safety standards to further protect our officials." So at least there's a positive at the end of that when they're looking to put something official into play as far as what going forward might be handed down by the league should you come into contact or engage an official in such a matter. But the 1-game suspension is an absolute farce. That's, to me, guys, like, and I think we all agree, that's like a slap in the face to your officials. It's tragic. You have an opportunity, and the ramifications involved. I heard a bunch of people from the sport of football looking at this, saying, set an example here, right, for all minor football and other sports as well. Just a shame. A blown, missed opportunity here.
Like, that's a, you brought up minor football. That's a great example. If a minor football player does that to an official, I don't think they play again this year.
You're damn right.
So how is it more severe in minor football than in the Canadian Football League?
Yeah, there has to be an absolute no contact. And in fairness, people are saying, hey, there's precedent here. Look at Austin. Look at this and that that's happened in the past. And in fairness, the CFL has blown that. But with each new event like this, and especially as a new commissioner coming in, you can come in and make a real solid statement with it. And such is not the case here.
Yeah, Randy Ambrosi had his first big test on his first day as commissioner, and he got a big fat F. Not even close to what should have been necessary there. It really is a joke. Like, that is beyond embarrassing for the league. To only go 1 game, at least go to war with the PA.
Yes.
And make it 4-6
exactly
or something like that. Like,
Wicks.
If you think 2-3, if you're Ambrosi and you think 2-3 is maybe more
just
in line,
yeah,
bump that up to, like, double that up.
Yep, agreed. Go to war with the PA. I completely agree with that, man, and agree with that with all leagues. Let you know, that's making a statement right there.
Your thoughts on the 1-game suspension handed to Will Hill for grabbing an official in the Canadian Football League, and everything else we were talking about as well. 780-1290, more of your calls when The Big Show returns on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Leave the back gate unlocked because TSN's coming over on select evenings throughout the summer. TSN 1290 will back up the truck with a portable party for up to 25 people, including catering by Qdoba Mexican Eats, including a burrito bowl hot bar with tortillas so you can make tacos and abundance of three cheese queso. I had some of that last night. More on that coming up. Beverages, including a sampling of Tallgrass Vodka, Winnipeg's only grain-to-bottle vodka produced by Capital K Distillery, a family pack of fireworks to light up your night courtesy of Archangel Fireworks, an iGrill 2 digital app connected thermometer for each grand prize winner provided by Lux Barbecue Company, and a hot tub for you to soak in over the course of a week provided by our friends at Oasis Leisure Center. We'll also have the TSN 1290 crew on site to help serve and set up. Parties will happen Thursday evenings from now until August, including July 20th and August 10th. Enter online at TSN1290.ca, and we could be seeing you soon. Last night was one of our winners. Kim Matthew had us over, had a great time, had some Qdoba Mexican Eats. She made some mini chocolate chip cookies, which if you eat 40, I believe only adds up to one cookie, right?
Is that the way it works?
Yeah. I tipped 38, so.
Nice. The old fat-free, protein-infused chocolate chip cookies.
Sure. And ran into several good people there. Of course, Eva Kovacs was there. Jeff Major from the Manitoba Moose was neighbors, so they were invited. And Mauro Zappia, one-third of the fabulous Flying Zappia brothers, Frank and Dom. Dom, a longtime listener and always tweeted us today. And Dom had this to say, well, the one-game suspension to Hill is brutal. What is the CFL thinking? So thanks, Kim, for having us all over. Congratulations. Enjoy those other prizes. It was a great night. And you, too, can get a backyard a barbecue and tailgate party. Just visit tsn1290.ca. to register. Back to the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. We're talking about the Will Hill one-game suspension by the CFL. Home run derby, Brandon Tanev's contract extension for Cheval Dayoff. Tyler Johnson gets a 7-year, 35 mil deal as well, and the All-Star game tonight. 780-1290. Derek, you're on the big show. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, boys. Love the show.
Thanks.
Hey, you know, I'm a basketball official here in the province, varsity level, and, you know, with this Hill suspension, I was hoping for 5 to 6 games. I was thinking it would be 3 to 4, but one game is ridiculous. Like, if any kid would do that to any of us, he'd be gone for the rest of the season. Mm-hmm. Like, it wouldn't even be close, you know?
And potentially, and so, life. Like if you contact an official as a minor player, you're done for the year for sure.
Right.
But it's a question of whether you get to play again.
Well, exactly. And it sends such a message, right? Like, in my opinion, that at that pro level you can get away with it, but at our minor levels, these kids, they'd be in big trouble.
Yeah, I don't get it. And we read Troy read the reasoning for it. I always look at things from both sides. And if I'm an official in the Canadian Football League, I'm sitting here going, like, I don't feel safe. You have a Hamilton Tiger Cats coach who came over and embarrassed and slapped me and whatever. And then you have one of his players coming over and grabbing me by the collar. And didn't he punch a player after as well?
I think before. That's
before?
What led to the thing, yeah.
So that's what led to it. And I don't get why. And the PA can argue, you know, he doesn't make a lot of money. It's the CFL, this and that. Fair enough. But that still doesn't take away from what you did. A 2 to 3 games. To me, suspensions are meant to deter it happening again, just as much as they are to punish the individual. And to me, I don't think the individual was punished enough, and I don't think there's any deterrent here. Like, what happens if a team's out of the playoff picture and it's week 15 and a guy has one game left on the schedule and he just goes, this ref has ticked me off all year long? Like, right. I just don't see the deterrent there.
Right. And am I wrong when I say that is the commissioner there to protect the officials, correct?
He should be.
I believe
so,
yeah.
Yeah, so
it's
it just
a joke,
doesn't make
man.
Any sense. To
yeah.
Now what if you would have punched him? Would it have been maybe 3 games?
Well, there have been things in the past where contact has been made where I saw that suspensions were, I believe, 1, 5, and 20, and the 20 was ended up being reduced down to 10 for spitting at a ref, or I believe it was. But
okay.
there are other examples of different levels of engagement with the official in play here.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, anyways, I just wanted to chime in, and I appreciate the show. Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
And thanks for being a ref, Derek. That's the toughest gig around, man, in sport, for sure.
Yeah, and I was going to say, we appreciate the insight there as an official as well. Thanks, Derek, on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290, or you can text us now, 1290-90. Standard message rates will apply there. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki with you, and the Boston Pizza Fan Line as well, 780-1290. Who's next, Brandon?
David.
David, welcome to the program.
Good morning, guys.
How are you?
Not too bad. So I was going to ask about the whole Hill situation and why he got into the ref's face and grabbed his jersey, but that last caller was able to explain it by saying that he had punched a rider and then got flagged and then was voicing his displeasure. Now, with him being ejected, Troy, what happens with what he would have earned during that game? Does he lose that completely, or does he get paid for like a partial game type of thing?
That's a fair question. I think a fine is involved immediately when you get ejected, although I'm not positive. But I think that there would be a fine from that game, so it would be probably fairly considerable. And then, of course, you don't get paid for the game you're suspended in either.
Okay, so he would probably get about $5,000. I'm assuming he'd be fined for automatically.
Yeah, the dollar amount, I don't know. It may depend on his game check sort of thing. Yeah, so like, you know, I don't know that it's a dollar of amount of, or if it's a percentage of the game check.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm wondering if maybe they took that into consideration when it came to levying the one game suspension. Like, it's still not enough, like you guys say. I think it should be a minimum of 2 to 3 games, but you guys were saying that it should be about 4.
Yeah, like, and I'm right there with Jim and I think most reasonable people here, where it's not something, you know, you lose half a game check and then you lose your next game check. That's going to sting you for sure and be difficult for some guys to deal with. But this shouldn't be something that stings you. This should be something that where you create an environment and a mindset where it's an unthinkable action. Right. And so if you're talking 4 games, for instance, you get suspended for just grabbing ref like that, then who in the world is going to do that? And we use this example a lot with our own justice system, that we'd like to see those types of things in play so that there's longer sentences dished out and stuff so that certain actions become unthinkable. But this is just, it's pathetic. How in the world? It's just the level of sacredness involved with the officials in the game. You've got to hold that safety for the officials in higher regard than this.
Yeah, exactly.
And like, to me, it's not like, and I appreciate where you're coming from, David, on what, like, and I agree, I was wondering how it led up to this too, but to me, there's nothing that could lead up to you putting your hands on an official.
No, not at all.
So I agree with the sentiment there, but I think the message needs to be sent that it doesn't matter what happened before, you cannot touch an official.
Yeah, they should have implemented something that was enough, like you guys said, to send a shockwave through the league where no player would ever do that again, or even in Ken Austin's case,
yes,
where he accidentally bumped into a ref in last season, like something like that.
Yeah, agreed.
It definitely should have been something should have happened with that where and that's a player would be feared for it.
That's a good point too, David, because I don't put what Hill did in the same category as what Austin did, but I do put him in the same categories. You can't touch an official.
No. Not at all.
So, like, a message has to be sent, and I don't think one has been.
And they crapped the bed with Austin. Remember, they initially, I think it was a 1-game suspension, and then they allowed him to be at the game up in the press box. Like, they just really, a couple of examples here of Mickey Mouse approaches to suspensions for sure. And this will, right, the PA will probably fight this 1-game suspension, right? And the PA should be holding hands with the league in certain situations, because I think the PA represents the players, and the vast majority of players would have a profound understanding of the importance of the respect on field for the officials. So I would think that, and you know, there are certain situations where the PA should work hand in hand for the betterment of everyone involved, and certainly protection for the officials should be one of those issues.
David, great call. We appreciate that, and we'll take more of your thoughts right now on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, and text us at 1290-90 with standard message rates applying as well. And I'm wondering on all this, gentlemen, the one-game suspension for Will Hill is how do the officials feel about this? Mm-hmm. Like, and we heard from Derek, who's a minor official with basketball, but the CFL officials, and I'm just as hard on officials overall on the job they're doing and the training they're provided by the leagues. But to me, one thing that regardless of the job and the efficiency of anything, you cannot touch these individuals. You cannot put your hands on these gentlemen who are doing this job. And so if I'm an official right now and I see this, and I don't know how they're organized or who's running them, but I have an extreme problem with this. I have an extreme problem the fact that for the second year in a row, mm-hmm. somebody from the Hamilton Tiger Cats organization has put your hands on one of us, and all they get is a one-game suspension.
I would love for them to come out united in this and you know, make a bit of a stink with this. Take the league on, and I doubt they would, right, with the new commission and all the rest of it. But it would be something I would certainly back, like what you're saying there, JT. And this is a microcosm of a larger thing, an issue, challenge in society right now, because there is no question whatsoever. It doesn't matter what league you're looking at or what level you're looking at. There is an eroding level of respect for officials in sport. And something like this just sort of adds to it. Instead of taking it in the other direction, cranking up the level of respect and everything else, you do something half-assed and Mickey Mouse like this, sort of opening the door and minimizing the penalty involved in engaging a ref like this.
When not a full-time job, it's hard to, you know, unite. But I think that if there was a way they could unite and stand up for this or against this, I think they should. And I know we're calling for some drastic action here, but again, I don't understand how you're allowed to put your hands on an official and only get a one-game suspension.
Yeah. Hey, look, for all the NHL's faults, they got the Weidman thing down pretty good, right? 20 games, I think, was the initial suspension, and then it kind of got that whole,
yep.
you know, the whole bargaining process after that, whatever happens. But that's what you do as a league, I think, and that's what you should do. Bring the hammer down hard on these guys, and if you want to fight it, hey, fight it, and let the legal system and all that mumbo-jumbo play itself out. That's kind of above my pay grade as to how that works, but
I'm saying, Wicks, in those situations for official safety, that the majority of players involved with the PA that should be directing and leading the PA anyway, the majority would be hand in hand in agreeing with the league and coming down on players like that. PAs need to wake up to me to start representing the majority desire of players, similar to often, especially in the NHL, when you see the PA protect those who are bringing down atrocities on the ice instead of the victims of the ice. They seem to run more to the aid of the perpetrator to make sure they keep their money in their pocket instead of making damn sure they're backing the player that was injured and helping with player safety. The PAs really need to wake up with this stuff.
It should be a united front, I agree, between the league, the officials, and the player, the PA itself, where we collectively come together.
And I tell you what,
that we
brother,
can't do this, and there should be a harsh fine for it.
You could, based on an incident like this, you could start a national campaign to highlight and bring shine a light as bright as the sun on this issue of increasing respect for officials and refs right across the board in all sports and at all levels. Like that's the type of leadership role that you'd love to see a commissioner come in like Randy Ambrosi and bring to the table here. Why not let something like this give birth to a notion, an idea like that, and make sport better right across the country?
Back to the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290 on the Big Show, TSN 1290. Who's next?
I will squeeze in Jeff.
Jeff, you're on the program.
Hey, guys. Yeah, great topic about treating the officials with respect. I coach baseball, and the umpires that we get are either adults or kids, and they do great jobs. They make, you know, they make mistakes just like the coaches do and the players do. But my son is 14 years old. He's turning 15 tomorrow, actually. He's 6'4", and eats me out of house and home. But he plays ball, but he's also an umpire. And a little funny story, a coach was questioning his call that he had made. And the coach was about 5'8", 5'9". And my son just turned to him and said, "Well, that's the way I saw it from up here." And but the coach, you could just see the coach, his shoulders sag. I couldn't hear what he said. But you could just see this coach his shoulders just sagged in defeat, and he turned around and walked away, and he was chuckling and shaking his head. And so I asked my son, I said, hey, Coop, what did you say to him? And he told me, and
we just
had a good laugh. So,
yeah.
Hey,
yeah,
I want a big shout-out to the Winnipeg Goldeyes. We play baseball out in Oak Bank, and they come out every year to us. They came out about 3-4 weeks ago, and they run a practice for the kids. And Reggie Abercrombie has got to be the greatest guy for the Goldeyes, because he comes out and he puts on a show for these guys, you know, for these kids. And I don't think Winnipeg fans are aware of how lucky we are to have the Goldeyes.
It's a fair point to make, man. Yeah,
yeah, you know, because you know they fall behind the Bombers and the Jets, but they have been coming out for 4 or 5 years now. And they do it every year, and they do it with enthusiasm, and they just make these kids feel like $1 million, and they teach them good things. So
right on, man. We love the Goldeyes around here. Andrew Collier, top shelf. Rick Forney, top shelf. Abercrombie, a player. Everyone raves when they come across him. The Goldeyes do it the right way out in the community, no question about it. Great call.
Call, Jeff. We appreciate the thoughts.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
Yeah, care, you man. Too. We got to take a break here, but great stuff. I'm going to hit the see Tommy ball game, Tommy Vaith as well. I'm going to hit the Goldeyes this weekend, actually. It's going to be a great time. The only better chirp than that was a pretty good chirp, is that's how I saw it from up here, is I made a height joke at PJ Stock at the Dale Hawerchuk banquet dinner. And I said, PJ, we'd like a few words. And he stood up. I go, do you want me to hold you up so everyone can see you? And, of course, everybody laughed. And he looked at me and he said, I scored 5 goals in the NHL at this height. What have you done? And I was like, you know what? Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah. I'll come down. And I knelt down and I said, interviewed him that way. So that was a very good comeback, PJ Stock. We'll take a break and more of your calls on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290, when we get back to the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Jim, Troy, and Brandon, and the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 on the Big Show, TSN 1290. Jake, we'll squeeze you in before we have to go. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much. Great show, guys. First-time caller, and appreciate listening to you guys every morning.
Thanks, we appreciate Jake. You taking the time to call in.
Here's a story. Back in the mid-70s, late 70s, I played in a 16 loop of 9-man senior men's football in rural Manitoba. It was a decent loop. It was a lot of fun. We played with the ex-juniors and so on, and it was good. Around 76, 77, one of the refs got pushed, and the player was suspended for the year, and the referees put out an ultimatum that it doesn't happen again. And about 3 weeks later, a ref got pushed again, and they shut down our league. We no longer played football. So The whole thing around this, the ref getting touched here and all that, I understand that. And my only comment would be, what if the referees said, and the whole union, the officials union, what if they turned around and said, no, we're going to walk out on one game just to prove a point? Is that something that might happen, or do they have a voice in this?
They have a voice, Jake, and I tell you what, man, I love the call. And I would personally love to see that happen, and I would back the refs 100%, but I'd be shocked if they took that action. But I'd love to see it.
Yeah. I think the referees in the Canadian Football League seem to be don't have the power that they do in the other leagues. That's for sure. But
you know what, though, Jeff? I disagree. I think the CFL is screwed if the refs ever took a stance like that and said, okay, man, we're out. We're in the – like, I think they're in a great spot.
Yeah,
the pool for too. CFL officials, compared to other leagues, is extremely small.
Yeah.
The ones I've seen come out of the CIS, and, you know, it's not full-time. And we've seen some officials actually not employed for several games when making poor enough calls. I just think that it's a tough enough job, and as I said, I am hard on officials, and I think there needs to be more training. I think leagues need to do more to get better quality of officiating, but that has nothing to do with this topic at all. You have to protect your officials, and I can't believe that a one-game suspension for, again, literally going up and grabbing an official by the collar, I would... I would love to see a response from the CFL officials on this and what their impressions are of this. Because we've seen it in the National Hockey League once in a while where, you know, when Weidman hit the official in Calgary, the officials weren't happy that the 20-game suspension was reduced, and they voiced their opinion on that. I'm very interested to see if there's any sort of voice or message sent from the officials on this, because I think it's unacceptable that you put your hands on somebody. The utmost part of the officials is they have to feel safe.
Yeah, and hey,
and protected.
At a bunch of different levels and a bunch of different sports, I've been playing sports for 45 years, and whether it's us as players, man or woman, any level, any sport, we have to do everything possible to ensure and maintain a real respectful relationship with the officials. There's all kinds of emotions that happen in the course of the game, but you're always, it's always up to you, a decision you make on how you're going to engage and talk to a ref, and we have to make damn sure that our teammates and even the team we're playing, right? It's up to us as players to make sure that safety is always absolute number one. And I also coach little kids soccer. And just a couple weeks ago, there was a team in a field right beside us where the coaches got really aggressive to this girl. She was no more than 14 years old, ridiculously aggressive to her. And a couple of us had to come to that field and settle the coach down. But whether you're coaching or playing sports, everyone involved, please, let's do everything possible to make all officials, all refs, feel very safe and protect the game in such a manner.
Rick Ralph is up next with the Don Vito Roundtable at 11 a.m. Hustlers in at 2 with the Gondola Pizza warm-up. And then he'll be around for the afternoon ride as well. I believe Paul Edmonds is joining him again today. And then it's the All-Star Game right here on TSN 1290 at 6 o'clock. More on this to come throughout the week, I'm sure. We appreciate you listening. We appreciate all the calls, tweets, and texts. And to end on a positive note, two tickets to MTS Super Spike 2017, July 21st and 22nd at Maple Grove Rugby Park. 12th caller through will get you there with these two tickets. Thanks for listening. On behalf of Troy Westwood, Brandon Rowicki, and myself, Jim Toth, we wish you a good day, and we'll be back tomorrow morning at 6 on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.